Good evening. My name is Mark Laredo. I'm Counselor-at-Large from Ward 7. I chair the Land Use Committee. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee. We are here to take up once again, and I'll read into the record, the docket items, and I'll go through our protocol for the evening. The docket items are 180-16-2, Mark Newtonville LLC, petition for a change of zone to Mixed Use 4, and 179-16, Mark Newtonville LLC, petition for special permit site plan approval. I won't read the lengthy narrative of what's being sought here. I think you're all aware this is relating to what is known as the Orr Building Project in Newtonville. I think many of you have been here for prior meetings. We are being both audio-taped and videotaped by New TV. Let me introduce my colleagues from the City Council, staff. I'll let Jonathan Yeo from the Planning Board introduce his colleagues, and we'll get right started. So And to my immediate left is Councilor Jim Carter, Councilor at Large from Ward 3 and a member of the committee. Next to him is Councilor Jeff Crosley, Councilor at Large from Ward 5 and a member of the committee. Next to Councilor Crosley is Councilor Susan Albright, who's moved a seat, I know, but that's permissible. It's a committee meeting. She's a Councilor at Large from Ward 2, not a member of the committee. Directly in front of me is Councilor Brian Yates, Councilor at Large from Ward 5, not a member of the committee. Next to him is Councilor Jake Auchincloss, Councilor at Large from Ward 2 and a member of the committee. And to my immediate right is Councilor Allison Leary, Ward Councilor, from Ward 1, not a member of the committee. Joining us is Councilor Rick Lipoff, Councilor at Large from Ward 8, member of the committee. I know that Councilor Norton was going to join us this evening, but she's home, I guess, sick. Otherwise, she would be here. We have with us from the legal department, Mr. Waddick, Robert Waddick. Behind him is Rhea Young, our deputy city solicitor. Next to, in front of her is Brian Heath, our director of planning. Next to Mr. Heath is Alexander Anant from the planning department. And next to Ms. Anant is Nadia Khan, our committee clerk. Jonathan Yeo, my former colleague on the school committee, is here on the planning and development board. Would you just introduce your colleagues, please?
Thank you, Mark. To my right is Vice Chair Peter Dorringer, and to my left is Sonia Pariska, who is our newest member.
Great.
And three of the five members.
Right. So what we're going to do, and we've been joined by Councilor Greg Schwartz, Councilor at Large from Ward 6 and Vice Chair of the committee, and Councilor Barbara Brusalk-Laser, Ward Councilor from Ward 3, not a member of the committee. What we're going to do this evening, folks, is we're going to start off by hearing from the planning development board. They voted this 4-2. There's a majority report, a minority report. I think we have both. I'm going to ask them to briefly summarize the majority position and then the dissent. I'll take any questions or comments from my colleagues about their conclusion. Then we'll let them go. I think they're welcome to stay, but obviously not required. I then will take comments from members of the public. I'm going to urge people to keep their comments to 3 minutes or less. I am going to keep track of time. We have a lot of people. I'm really, really going to urge folks, when they come to the podium, state your name, state your address, state what your concern is, but please, if you've sent it to us before, and sent it to us perhaps more than once before, whether you're for or against the project, you're welcome to say anything you want, but if you want to be more helpful to us, and I would think that's what you all want to do, try to focus on a particular issue that's in the draft board order that we can get our arms around, because that will be most helpful. When we're done with that, I am not going to close the public hearing tonight. We are scheduled to take this matter up again, at least for now, on February 7th. And that's our plan, is to take it up that evening. So the public hearing will not be closed. Once we get comments from the public this evening, we are going to get to work again on the board order. Last time, for those who are here, you'll recall we went through the conditions. We now have draft findings and revised conditions, and this time we're going to walk it through really from beginning to end. Just to be very clear, my goal in this committee for us is I want us to have a board order that is clear, that is reflects the will of the committee, that when it gets to the floor of the full council, we're not debating the particulars of the board order, the findings, we're not trying to amend little things. Rather, when we get to the full city council, we are going to have a robust debate on this project, both on whether to change the zoning and then on the special permit. And I'm really hopeful that because of the hard work we've been doing in this committee, that debate will focus on the big issues and the details, the granular stuff, is really the work of the committee, and that's what we're going to pay particular attention to this evening. So with that, Jonathan, you want to start us off with the majority report?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At our last meeting of the Planning Development Board, by a vote of 4-2, we voted to recommend approval of this zoning change. Scott Wolf, our chair, myself, Sonia, and Barney Heath, Director of Planning and Development, were the four votes affirmative. I thought that I would just go through a couple of bullet points. So you have our memo dated January 31st. And also just make a couple of very sort of general and personal comments. Sonia may have a quick note before Peter can give his minority opinion. Just in terms of bullet points, Mr. Chair, we've discussed this at length. Many of us attended many of your hearings and listened to all of the details of various permutations of this project and thought very carefully about this and felt very strongly that the MU4 was the best zoning for this project, the best tool to be used by the City Council and the Planning Department to get the best project for this site. Some of the bullet points I thought I'd quickly mention: that the MU4 zone was really specifically designed for application in the village center to promote pedestrian activity and really prevent a mismatch of one-story buildings with various setbacks that really don't contribute to the context of our what we want to be a lively village center. Also, that the MU4 zone allowance of up to 5 stories is appropriate and compatible with the property frontage along Washington Street, and that the MU4 zone brings with it many ancillary benefits that are not permitted in the BU1 and BU2 zone, and we've listed a lot of those, we've discussed a lot of those here. Also, we mentioned that the increased density allowed in the MU4 district may encourage the development of smaller size units, studios and one bedrooms, which are really lacking here in Newton, and that we feel are not going to overrun our school system also with a lot of students. And in short, we really feel that the MU4 zone confers numerous benefits that will result in a much better project for Newtonville that we could get under the existing zoning. Quickly, I just wanted to mention that I live very close to this project, and I'd say we are all very excited about this project. We think we're going to get a much better product using this tool. And also, I personally think that the council does have the ability to really use its special permitting powers to make this a better project using this zoning tool. So that's what I will mention. And Sonia, if you have anything.
Yeah, a quick note too that I would like to add that MU4 will deliver a better project. It requires a builder to do open space, pedestrian entrances to the building each 50 feet, and encourages active streetscape, the much needed, especially to fill the gap that mass pipes create between the two sides. I think last but not least, it keeps the MU4 keeps with the vision with the comprehensive planning that was designed in the village center. That's it.
Great. Thank you very much, Peter. So Jonathan's given you a good introduction to our due diligence in hearing all the comments and doing our research on this project. Megan Millard and I were in the minority. We wrote the minority report, and I want to speak for both of us in thanking the committee for the opportunity to present our comments. I have only one slide. I'm going to try to keep things maybe not quite as short as John, but to keep them short for me. We're here also at the end to answer any questions from the committee. So it may surprise some of you, me included, that Megan and I actually agree with almost all of the advantages that were listed in the majority report to explain why it is that they voted in favor of the rezoning petition. However, our own reading of the comprehensive plan, which is an important piece for the zoning review process, suggests that beyond these advantages that are there, that come with the MU4, and that we readily admit to and indeed mostly like,
Development densities are also supposed to be compatible with neighborhood character. These are kind of one-off projects that looked at individually in their context. So the neighborhood character is supposed to be an important element of the compatibility process, and that the neighborhood assessments are important to determining whether a project is or is not compatible. We don't believe that these issues of neighborhood compatibility and of weight given to neighborhood assessment were adequately acknowledged in the draft board order that the planning board reviewed at its last meeting. I understand there have been several different versions, so I know we might see something different in it now since we voted. But at the time we voted, it didn't seem that the compatibility question was addressed, and that the height and the massing density of the proposed project did not meet what we saw as the test of compatibility with the neighborhood character. So we do recognize that after months of intensive community input on the Washington Place project, we realize that there is no consensus, no matter how you want to define the geographical scope of people's agreement. There is no consensus, really, on the question of height and density and compatibility with the neighborhood. But there is evidence of substantial neighborhood opposition in the citizens' position opposing the project on these and other grounds. And this opposition, we felt, was sufficiently large to raise the threshold vote, or we know it's sufficiently large, to raise the threshold vote on rezoning to 18 out of the 24 city councilors. So while we see merit to many of the neighborhood arguments, as well as merit in the majority report, the opposing neighborhood arguments, we wanted to follow the comprehensive plan in giving weight to this opposition in reaching our decision. But we also think that a jump to a somewhat larger building, a 3-to-4-story building, would be compatible with the neighborhood. A 3-to-4-story building could blend in with the 2-to-3 stories and lively roof lines of the historic buildings across from the project on the north side of Walnut Street. We think it would be compatible with the same kinds of buildings on the south side of Walnut Street in Newtonville Village. And we also think it would be compatible with the dominant 2-to-3-story pattern along the entire Washington Street corridor from West Newton to Newton Center. We could not, neither Megan nor I, find the same compatibility in the height and massing of a proposed 4-to-5-story building. So, nevertheless, we also recognize that it was time for the stakeholders in Newton, those in this room, those that are not present, to reach some kind of a compromise, and we would have actually welcomed the opportunity to vote for the MU4 zoning change based on a version of the developer's November 1st, 2016 proposal for a 4-story option B plan, one that would have been practically identical with the developer's proposal, but with somewhat larger rear setbacks. This option, in our view, clearly dominates the 4-story proposal currently on the 4-to-5-story proposal currently on the table. It reaches the threshold of compatibility, in our view, with the height and massing of the neighborhood. It sufficiently protects the abutters in the historic district. It would maintain most of the benefits of the larger project that are cited by the city. Probably what we know we would lose some apartments. But there was no sign that the major other benefits would be affected in any substantial way, as we understood the proposal. And it gives the developer what we both felt was the important flexibility, and to pick up on Jonathan's point about smaller units, we thought that it would give the developer the flexibility and the number of units per lot area that have turned out to be very important in his comments seeking the support of the rezoning proposal. When option B, however, was definitively withdrawn from further consideration, Megan and I felt that we really had no other choice at this time than to vote against the MU4 zoning proposal because of the height and massing of the project. We do, as a personal aside, we would hope that somehow in this process of active debate, either in the Land Use Committee or before the full City Council, that there would be some way of resurrecting a version of option B, a four-story version, and we would be delighted to see that happen. Thank you.
Thank you. We've been joined by Councilor Scott Lennon, President of the City Council and member of the committee, Councilor at Large from Ward 1, and Councilor Richard Glazer, Ward Councilor from Ward 6, not a member of the committee, but always welcome. So any questions for the planning department? Not planning department, forgive me, for the board? Councilor Schwartz? I'm sorry, Councilor Auchincloss, do you have a question? Oh, Councilor Crossley, I'm sorry. I'm just seeing the pointing going across
the
room.
That's okay.
You know, we remember not to point.
Were you really just pointing toward me?
I will follow.
All right. So I attended the planning board hearing in its entirety. I wanted to hear and observe the hearing and the discussion. And what you say to us today pretty much follows, you know, what I heard that evening. But as a general, maybe a comment and a question, the idea of the planning board sitting and making a recommendation to the council, I believe, is to give us a quasi-professional judgment about the zone change. And ideally you might look at the zone change independently of a project, and look at it in terms of what opportunities it brings to a site, and is this site an appropriate site for that zone change because of the opportunities that it brings that perhaps no other zone change would bring. And I heard that responded to by Mr. Yeo. I didn't hear that in the opposing opinion, which seemed to be rooted in the particular project and whether or not the project as it has evolved over time is what you would rather see there. And it's troubling to me, but if I could hear any more about what metrics you applied to make the determination that, the word compatibility is a pretty vague word. It's a pretty open-ended concept, and so you really need some metrics to apply to determine, to try to objectify it. And we've had, I'm sure you know, I don't know if this is our eighth or ninth meeting, many conversations about the different options the developer has presented, and taken up things like shadow studies and the appropriate layout of the mass on the site so that it would impact the abutting residential areas the least. And it's curious to me that you would have approved it, if you were looking at the four-story scheme, which I think the consensus in this room among the committee was that scheme actually had a worse impact on the abutting residential area because if the building is roughly the same size, it required pushing the mass back toward the residential area.
Councilor Crossley, I'm going to ask that
we ask them a question. Yeah,
okay.
I want to understand it. Did you hear all of those conversations, and what metrics did you apply to make that determination about compatibility?
Councilor Crossley, before I let the minority opinion answer that, largely directed towards them, but if the chairman were here, as you probably have heard him say several times, that he feels very strongly that our decision, our recommendation, is really just about the zoning change. We have a very distinct responsibility and recommendation to give to the city council. It's your all responsibility to deal with the permitting and really get the project right, working with the developers and the planning department, and I completely trust that you guys are going to do that. So I'm largely in Chairman Wolf's camp regarding the narrowness of our responsibilities in terms of looking solely at the zoning change. Now, you know, I'll let Peter explain his thinking on this.
Okay, well, so Jonathan's right that, you know, I'm relatively new to the board and still learning about zoning, but it's been emphasized to me, first of all, that what we do is zoning, not special permits. And secondly, I've been told that these MU4 determinations about zoning, whether the MU4 zoning change should occur, are really based on the much more on place than our current zoning regulations are. Now, so that to me says that if we find that there is something in the place that makes the particular project inappropriate for the current place that's being proposed to be built, that as long as it's based on a consideration that is related to zoning rather than to special permits, this is within our purview as a board to report our recommendations on. So it's kind of in that spirit and guidance that the minority view was not, is MU4 zoning appropriate for all projects in this area, any project that comes in be eligible for MU4, or should we look at the specific characteristics of the project that are related to zoning? Now, on the metric issue, I think that's a very good question. I'm not sure that anything that I've read so far has what I would regard as an economist as a statistical or a quantitative metric to make these kinds of judgments. But I think where Megan Merrill and I came out really after visiting the site, after, you know, looking at Newtonville and casting an eye as an informed citizen and planning board member on the height density mass of this particular project, that moving from the heights of the best buildings in the area to create another building in an area which is essentially 2 to 3 stories with a handful of feet of 3 stories with taller 4-story very lively roofs, that this project was too discontinuous, if you like. That was, in a sense, our metric. This was a very discontinuous project with respect to the surrounding area. And secondly, we did take to heart, because this is not a decision that we made lightly, we did take to heart the theme in the comprehensive plan that the issue of that a lot of the metric, if you like, for cultural compatibility would arise from the community. And we didn't feel that there was very good guidance from the variety of opinions that had been expressed, but we did think that there was evidence of a fairly substantial opposition by the neighborhood that was most affected by that building, and we found really that reference to neighborhood input and neighborhood compatibility were missing from the document we reviewed and missing from a lot of the documents that came from the city. So I don't know if I covered all your questions, but that was sort of, you know, I don't know what metric the board is, the committee is using.
We're struggling with our metrics too. Councilor Schwartz.
Well, I think that my questions have been raised by Councilor Crossley actually better than I could have articulated them. But just two additional questions that came that I had, and that's for both sides of the report. One is for the minority, which is just a follow-on to this perplexing analysis, which I think, if I'm reading it right, if I'm hearing you right, you're saying, Peter, that the height that's allowed in MU4, you felt was not compatible with the neighborhood, so that's why you felt MU4 was inappropriate. And yet, your other comments seem to imply that you're fine with the number of units that one could only get with an MU4 change. So I think that's where I'm stuck on the consistency of your rationale. And I guess it's okay if one is if the height is a deal breaker on the zone change, then I can understand it. But if you're also saying that the density is okay, then I guess it's conflicting. And then on the pro side, I guess when I read the bullet points of what appeals to the planning board's support for the zone change, what I'm puzzled by is a number of those could be required in the special permit process that we would go through without the zone change. We could stipulate that the buildings, you know, don't have parking up against the street. We could make sure it's a vibrant streetscape. So what do we get with the MU4 that we wouldn't be able to require in a regular special permit for the zone that it's already in? And I guess I'd love to hear, maybe taking the second one first, because I think Jonathan looks like he's ready to answer.
Well, that's a good question. Our bullet points only just covered a small number of the points. I think, you know, if you really look at the planning department's memo from January 27th and read many of the comments made, the detailed comments made by professionals regarding the zoning change, it does lay out the great advantages of this tool, and we did not try to list them all in the bullets. I understand you could try to use the existing zoning and through special permitting try to deal with some of these issues, but the MU4 tool is far superior. I think you're just going to get a better product and a better project out of this. And we also feel that you know, having that number of units, getting all of that affordable housing, is also very important. I think the latest memo on the affordable housing units is really important for us. We're struggling as a board trying to get affordable housing units throughout the city, and this is not an insignificant number that will be coming with this project, and I think that's also a benefit we see. So I think overall, you know, the planning department's memo lays out many of the other advantages of this zoning tool. And I think the other thing I also neglected to mention is that, you know, really our vote also made it clear that this recommendation was just for this site. I mean, we don't necessarily think that this is the right tool in other locations in Newtonville or in other parts of the city, but we feel like this tool is right for this zone, this area in Newtonville, in the Village Center. So, is that good?
So I'm sorry if I left the impression that I was trying to talk both sides of the issue. Our understanding, you know, I guess I would say that a 3-4 shorter, less massive project would have been our first preference as board members. We thought that was actually more, that was a little bit above, more building than the neighborhood opposition was looking for, but we thought that would be our personal view. When we saw the option B plan, which contained a lot of affordable housing, it contained, as I recall, the traffic pattern changes, it contained a great deal of what was in the 4-5 story proposal. But when it was a four-story proposal, so there were going to be fewer units in that building, even though I have been a major strong advocate for affordable housing. I was prepared to see some reduction in the affordable housing in this project to get a final project that was more compatible with, I'll call it more consistent, if the word compatibility is the wrong word, that was really more consistent with the architecture of the surrounding neighborhood. And we would have tried to accomplish that within the framework of a smaller specific MU4 proposal on this lot.
Zero.
Okay.
We've been joined by Councilor Jay Harney, Ward Councilor from Ward 4, and a member of the committee. Do you want to follow up, Councilor Schwartz?
Well, I guess I'm still puzzled because it seems very specific to the project, whereas I understand what Jonathan was saying about this particular site and what should go there, but when you start talking about the actual project, it sounds like what the minority was saying was that they're fine with MU4 as long as it's a little shorter, which sounds like that's not really a zone, it's a decision that sounds very too specific perhaps to the proposal than what I thought we were supposed to be considering, but perhaps I've got it wrong, but I just wanted to clarify. It sounded like the height was really the sticking point. The number of units was, because you can't get that number of units without the zone change, so it seems like that was okay, the number was okay, but it's just the height was not.
I mean, the history of this project has been a series of trade-offs.
Sure, okay.
All right, and so number one, we were looking for a different trade-off that was consistent with our advisory authority, if you like, in zoning matters.
Okay, thank you very much.
Council Auction Class.
Briefly to follow up from Councilor Schwartz and Councilor Crossley. To be candid, we're hearing diametric the opposite things from the majority and the minority on the board. From Mr. Yeo, we're hearing this is just about zoning and we're in favor of the zoning change. And from the minority, we're hearing this is sort of just about zoning. We're in favor of the zoning change, but we don't like this project, so we're against. And I'm just confused about the nature of the advice that we're getting here. Is it the will of the entire planning board that the zoning change is good? Regardless of the obvious disagreement about the nature of the project, would you say that in a vacuum, the MU4 would have passed entirely?
Well, as Jonathan said, our mandate in this issue has been described to us as a mandate which is not taken in a vacuum. So, hypothetically, one could say that there are certain minimum threshold criteria that have to be passed for a site to be eligible for MU4. And there might have been a feeling that, well, MU4, you know, this is a site that meets that eligibility criterion. But we were also looking at other considerations, such as height, and not hypothetically, but in the context of a specific site and a specific project.
Go ahead. I don't want us to get into a back and forth debate. All three questions are extremely helpful and I think thoughtful, but I don't want to have a debate on this with it. I will add a different observation or maybe two. I'm actually seeing both sides being very site specific here because what I'm really interested in, and we haven't heard from the planning department, is what's the vision for Newtonville? Is all of Newtonville going to be an MU4? Is it appropriate for MU4? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You know, what about across the street where the Dunkin' Donuts is and you see the old Pier Pot, and that's my neck of the woods, and you know, it's Cook Restaurant now, or what about further down where you go, you know, past the gas station and that area? Is that MU4? Is MU4 across the street when you go to you know, where the Star Market is or where the CVS is. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that we haven't had any discussion about at all, but in many ways is really underpinning a lot of what our dialogue is. I think that's what you were getting at a little bit, Councilor Schwartz. You don't have to respond to that now. I don't think it's worth it, but it really, we need to hear that because we're, I think, whether we like it or not, we're being asked to act in somewhat of a vacuum here, and we've not heard a professional opinion during this discussion about what about the sites that are adjacent to it, and I think that would be informative. Councillor Auchincloss.
I'm going to steal what I know Councillor Albert's about to say, which is that she and I have docketed something to define the appropriate location for an MU4, to have the discussion about the appropriate location for the MU4, precisely because we agree that Newtonville, Newton Center, we should talk about what we're talking about.
Well, I'm glad you agree with me. That's wonderful. But I'll pass that observation. My only other observation, and I don't know if you want to address this or not, Jonathan, is that, and I think it goes to what Councilor Schwartz said, as I understand it, and Ms. Anand can correct me if I'm wrong, the only things that could not take place in the business districts are a fifth story, absolutely prohibited, and the number of residential units would be increasing it beyond 103 or 104 be prohibited, but the mass of the building, if you put commercial there and residential, could be very similar. Am I accurate about that?
You are correct. You could have pretty much an identical project on the site via special permit in the business 2 zone.
And just so we're clear, this project, given its size, would have to get a special permit because it's well above the 20,000 square feet.
It certainly would, and the site is zoned both B1 and B2,
right.
So I'm sort of saying yes with the assumption that it would be all zoned, one consistent zone, and B2 allows for 4 stories, B1 doesn't. So,
you know, as I appreciate that, and maybe for Councilor Albright and Auchincloss, as you docket your item, maybe some thought could be given too about why we have a difference between a B1 and a B2 zone in a in properties that are literally next door to each other. If you want to quickly say something about that, Councilor Albright, that'd be great.
So I would only remind us that we are going through zoning reform too. And we have, I think we all, I don't know, the zoning and planning committee got an update. I don't know if it went to the whole council. So the work is going on of the consultant. And this issue right here that we're talking about, where is MU4 appropriate, what's B1, what's B2, et cetera, is all going to be part of that. And we'll be talking about it in the spring.
Good. I raise the issue because I think it's a very important one that really transcends this project. Anything else for the planning development board? Thank you all very much for coming. We really appreciate your input, your thoughtfulness. It's been very helpful. Okay, with that, I am going to take public comment. You're all welcome to stay, but don't feel obligated. So can I just get a quick show of hands? Who wants to speak this evening? Okay. I think I started on this side last time, so I'm going to start on this side this time. That woman right there, if you just come on up, please, ma'am. And we're going to work backwards, and then we'll go to this side. I will try to get everybody in tonight. Remember, 2 things. I'm not closing the public hearing. And 2, we have to have an opportunity to do some work. Not that listening to folks is an important work, but we have to work on the board order. And we're going to really try to do that, I'd say, no later than 8:45 or so. Good evening.
Oh, now it is working. My name is Renata Yassidian. I've been here twice before, and we do need this kind of building. It just came to my attention today that in whole of Newton, there are only 7 buildings that have elevator for us citizens to get an apartment. And this building that is now being planned is also planning apartments for senior citizens. And that would be a great help to us. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, please, on this side. Anybody in the rows back, come on up. Peter, want to come on up? And then we'll just work our way back, okay? Go ahead. Good evening.
Hi, my name is Peter Sachs. I'm a local architect, and I've had the pleasure of looking at the plans, and I think I'll just talk about what I do in my perception of the project. And also listening to the discussion about the metrics and how one can make determinations about the height and appropriateness of a building. As I look at the project and sort of think about the neighborhood, I've lived here for almost 25 years in Newton. What I really enjoyed about the architecture that I looked at, which I would like to compliment the architect, is the corner of Walnut and Washington to me with the five stories was very reminiscent of the Masonic building on the other side of the bridge. And then I was particularly impressed by the four stories and the way that the building stepped back for the fifth story. It impressed me in terms of how the architect designed it. And I know as an architect, I think there's things that I would say about an architect's ability to sort of visualize the built world compared to how we might intellectualize the word compatibility and neighborhood. And so it's my impression from looking at the drawings that I have a great deal of confidence that this project, as I look at the four stories, they are reminiscent of some old photographs I can recall seeing about Newtonville and how it was a really shops on the first floor, 3 to 4 floors above of living. And so when I look at the architect's drawings, what I see are sort of brick vertical buildings that look not like one big building, but like a collection of buildings, like a neighborhood. And so I find the design compelling, the idea that there's an internal walkway, extremely compelling in terms of the neighborhood, creating outdoor spaces, all the things that we would like to see in a sensitive urban environment. The other piece of the project that I really was impressed by was the amount of open space behind the building, and that were there to be a change from the fifth story down to a fourth story and the building became wider, it then begins to further encroach into the neighborhood. And I like the distance that there is there, and I think it works very well to keep the open space. Lastly, I'd like to point out that I think that from an architectural standpoint or building volume or building massing, it's difficult to find an appropriate or compatible space. We were just discussing, as you said, like what is the M4? How does it extend? How long does it go? Where should it be? And this site-specific nature of this building, in my opinion, relates specifically to the size of Washington Street. It's there is a train track there. It's an open and large space, which I think begs to be occupied by something that is, in fact, five stories. Where the elimination of that extra space to compromise the quality of the development and what the developer or the builder could give the community, say in the form of community spaces, added apartments for elderly, I think it would be a compromise, and there's no reason for us to encourage development in this city if we're going to stress the actual building of it and economics of it to the point that we wonder whether it would be successful. Lastly, I'd like to say, with the money I'm spending on my kids for college, I'm going to need an apartment. And that's where I'd like to be. I like the place. I'd live there. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please, come on up. We always ask for name and address, ma'am. We're going to go with name and address. Go ahead, please, sir. Robert Smith, 40 Foster Street. I've spoken before as an abutter, and I'm not going to repeat some of the reasons why we have concerns about the project. I did want to ask a question. We just saw on the website the 3D massing model, and I wanted to have a sense of, is that something that's been, been presented to the Land Use Committee? We were fortunate enough to have Councillor Albright show us some of that, and in a very amateurish way, we did some screenshots, which are on the back page of the handout we have, and I apologize for the quality of that, but what we wanted to just show you was that the 3D massing model, when properly manipulated, which we had some trouble with, does give you a better idea of what the project would look like from the homes on Foster Street.
Right, Ms. Anand, do we have that for us? I don't recall that.
We haven't had it presented formally by the developer. We could, you know, ask for that at our next meeting if you're interested.
Is it on the website?
I'm not aware that it has been posted.
But why don't, if it exists, why don't we have it?
It's hot. You have to download a software to view it. So we were trying to work on getting a more user-friendly model.
Is this something the developer could make available to us?
Yes.
I'm sorry, and I don't want to ordinarily do this, but it's a point of information.
I have thought that a member of the development team had submitted it to Ms. Carney and Ms. Anand. If that has, and I thought it was up on the website. If that has not happened, we'll have it see first thing tomorrow morning. And has, I see you shaking your head, yes.
You did submit it to us, but we haven't been able to get it up on the website.
All right, we can make a member of our team available. We'll contact Ms. Carney tomorrow to do that. Mr. Chairman, if you want us to show it at the next meeting, we can do that too.
Yes, and I'd really like to make sure that my colleagues get to see something that you're obviously relying on that you think is important. I think it would be edifying for us. And, you know, I understand we had technical glitch, and we'll deal with it, okay? Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Go ahead. And the point of our request is we think the finding relating to the impact of the neighbors, it'd be important to look at that 3D simulation from the perspective of the neighbor's home, looking at the project, both at nighttime and also in the winter when there are no leaves. Unfortunately, what we saw had trees, some of which are real and some of which may be prospective. The second point I just want to make is we were obviously operating on a fairly short turnaround time. We saw the last draft of the planning board report on Friday. So we did come up with these comments that we submitted. I'm glad to hear that the hearing will be continued. So I just wanted to say that we may have some additional ones with more time, but we hope that these are sort of the core questions. Because whatever project is built, obviously the conditions are important to the abutters.
Thank you. And I'll just add, any member of the public is welcome after tonight if there's things they want to tell us about the proposed order, submit them in writing to Ms. Kine to get them right out to us. Good evening. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Ann Cohen. I'm professionally known as Annie Raines. I'm a musician, artist. I live on 50 Court Street in Newtonville. And first of all, I just want to thank everybody for coming tonight for being part of this process. I really appreciate Newton's government and the robust city council that it has, and I hope that the city council continues to be as robust and numerous as it has been in the past. I wanted to find out if anybody rode the commuter rail today. No? Okay. Did anybody ride their bike here tonight? Okay. Because I live in Newtonville, and it's a transit-oriented area, apparently, and I know there are a lot of people from Newtonville here. So I'm concerned about the size of this development. Obviously, it's a really massive building, and it's being downplayed, of course. Everybody understands that the developers have an interest in downplaying the size of it and the impact of it. But some of the traffic impact they're measuring is taking place while some of these buildings that are going to be torn down are vacant, and before Austin Street is even broken ground. So the congestion that Newtonville currently experiences in the evening rush hour, for instance, cars backed up from Walnut Street to Harvard Ave, is already happening, and we don't even have the new units on Austin Street to contend with as far as extra cars. In response to something I heard earlier, I would argue that one- and two-story buildings are a quintessential part of a village center. And further, I'm a great admirer of architects, and I could never actually make it through a school to become one,
I didn't try, but I'm saying I wouldn't have been able to. But to compare this development and the pictures that I've seen of it with the Masonic Center, it surprises me, since I think of architecture as being very good spatially with measuring comparative sizes. Your comment, Chairman, about turning about the NU4 being an issue for all of Newtonville is a serious question, and I feel that this kind of predatory development is what triggers more and more of these kinds of zoning changes, because one building gets bigger, and then the one next to it is in the shadow, and they want to get bigger too. So that this could possibly turn what is a village center into an urban corridor. And if you want to think about some of the hidden risks of conceding to developers, I would invite any of you to visit Court Street, where they're putting a fourth story up on the back of that little three-story condo building. It's a luxury condo building in progress. It has 9 affordable units and 25 unaffordable ones. I think it's a good idea to invite citizens to contribute more ideas to solving the affordable housing problems in Newton. I think we have some good ideas that we would love to put into the conversation. And I think it's important to remember that we're talking about people here and not tools. Also, I did a Google search. I did an internet search for 5-story mixed-use development and 240,000 square foot, 160 units and things like that. And it brought up a lot of current projects going on around the country. Most of them are in places like Midtown Manhattan, the LYT station, Fort Worth, Texas, Seattle, Washington, West Los Angeles, downtown Newtonville. I feel like something is wrong with this picture. We don't even have a Space Needle, and now we're going to have a 5-story, entire block-long building. This is much more appropriate in major cities with much larger populations. We're talking about a village center.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up, please.
I understand. Okay, just to conclude, I would like to propose that Newton planners see Newtonville as a slow-growth investment rather than what people are calling smart growth, which to me is just rapid growth. And I think that rapid growth could turn Newtonville into a very expensive headache for the city, with tall buildings, deep shadows, wind tunnels, a lot of buses vying for lanes with more cars, emergency vehicles, attempting to serve the needs of 300-plus new residents. Newtonville is the village of Newton. That's what the sign says. It's not a quick profit. So please consider letting the current zoning stand for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Tamara Bliss. I live at 9 Lewis Street, which is about 10 blocks from this facility. I regularly shop there. You've all heard me talk about seniors and our needs. I have to tell you more a personal story tonight. Maybe it will help people understand. My husband and I have lived in our home for 48 years. He has been able traditionally to maintain it, to shovel, rake leaves, fix everything. Climb stairs. We are in our mid to late 70s. How many of you will be able to stay in your lovely Victorian home as you get older? This is no longer a possible situation for us. I am now in the process, because of my husband's health, of trying to find an accessible apartment that would be suitable for someone who wants desperately to stay in the city and remain in a community center. Many of you will grow older. You think you can stay in your home forever. You know I started Newton at Home, and we can help you, but you cannot always stay in a multi-story Victorian house that is really designed for people with servants to take care of them when they're older. It's not funny. It is not funny. You have to think about not just where you are now, but where you might want to move. Most of my friends who have to find this kind of housing have left the city. If you want that, then vote this down. If you want to have a building that will be under the current zoning, it will be all 3 and 4 bedroom units. We need studios, we need 1 bedroom, we need 2 bedrooms. There are real people who need this at different income levels. Please support this proposal.
Thank you. Next, please. Good evening. And we just keep taking people on this side of the room, so if a couple of people want to line up, that'd be great. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Kenneth Roberts, and I live at 252 Cabot Street, Newtonville, and I'm also the Vice President and General Manager of Newtonville Camera. Hello to the Honorable Chairman and the members of the Community Council, of course, my fellow residents. Your building was built about 100 years ago. That's a pretty good span of time for a building. Over the next 100 years, there's going to be a lot of changes. I'd really like for the community and the council to think about what Newtonville will look like over the mid to long term. In my humble opinion, everyone in this room looks and acts with youthful vigor. I don't know if anyone's over 40 or not. We all look so young and we speak so well. However, I have noticed that there hasn't been a lot of input from, say, the under 35 age group. However, the people that I have seen that have come up to speak, they've pretty much seem to all been for the project. Now, I fall in between those two groups, though. I don't claim to speak for anyone but myself. I do think that all opinions are important and they should be heard, but I also think that all time frames should be considered. I've heard a lot about the past and the present, but also I ask that you please consider the mid- and long-term future. This is something that will impact our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And as someone who's just recently become an uncle, I'm thinking a lot more about, you know, future generations. This project allows for a moderate amount of expansion for residential space that's needed now, never mind into the future. It's a classy-looking building and will benefit the look and feel of Newtonville. Again, I thank you for your consideration, and thank you.
Thank you. Come on up, please, sir. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Darrell Settles. I live at 52 Hood Street in Newton Corner. First, I want to say I 100% support the comment from the previous speaker. I strongly support this project. The location itself is ideal for increased density and height relief. It is overlooking the Mass Pike and near public transportation. We need more affordable smaller units for the elderly and younger professionals. We also need a more lively Newton. Surrounding communities like Watertown, Needham, and Waltham are saving up with new development. The point I want to mention is that the developer is going over and beyond by offering 25% affordable units. Where else do you see that? Where else? Nowhere. I ask that you please support this project and help Newton become a more developer-friendly community. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please, come on up. Anybody else on this side of the room? All right. If there is, just stand in line behind the camera. There's a few people in the first row. Good evening.
I'm Dan Elias, director of the new Art Center at 61 Washington Park in Newtonville. One purely technical point, which you're asking for language of the board order.
Absolutely.
There is in this order a condition which sets aside 2,000 square feet for purposes of an arts organization. I would ask that we include language to restrict the cost of that space. There is, in the last draft I've seen, there is no language to restrict the cost, but that the city reserved to itself the right to have that space available for no cost or for nominal cost. Also, that there be some kind of point of contact with the city, both for the developer and for the agency that ends up with that space, as a point of contact with the city government. So those two points, I've sent those comments to Alexandra as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Next, please come on up. Good evening.
Hi, my name is Lorraine Stanek. My husband and I live at 411 Newtonville Avenue. I wanted to first say that I'm opposed to allowing this structure to go to 5 stories. I'm concerned that I've been at most of these hearings and concerned that the voices of the people who actually live in Newtonville are not always the predominant voices being heard. We hear from people from Newton Highlands, from Newton Center, from Wappen, And it's very easy for other people to say that this is a perfect location to build five-story buildings. And I think it's really important to recognize that there have been over 900 signatures collected by citizens of Newtonville, as well as speakers at these meetings. I don't believe that the project requires five stories just to incorporate smaller units, which I appreciate are a concern of people, and that certainly should be able to be done in a creative manner within the four stories. I also understand, and I think it's been mentioned tonight, that the city is in the process of reevaluating zoning citywide. So it doesn't seem that this is the time to be thinking about rezoning an individual parcel. To allow this change in zoning under these circumstances sets a very bad precedent for the process and for the rest of Washington Street. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Anyone else on this side of the room? Have I gotten everyone? Oh, okay. I'm trying to, you know, just as an, we'll start on the front row here and then we'll move backwards. Just as an aside, I realize it's a little awkward to raise your hand and get called upon, but frankly, I really have tried to avoid on the smooth having people come up 35 minutes or an hour in advance so they can sign in. I don't think that's a good use of time. If you differ in this difference of opinion on that, I'll try it differently another time. Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. Peter Bruce from Craftsman Place in Thriving Newtonville. I'd like to talk about Washington Place in the English language. Long ago, George Orwell noted that as politics becomes corrupt, so does language and thought. But if politics can corrupt language with, quote, a mass of lies, evasions, folly, hatred, and schizophrenia, it's also true that language can corrupt thought and politics, as we see today by the spreading of alt-facts and bigotry. It's our duty as citizens to guard against this debasing of language. And we can do that here by rejecting the developer's factoid that he'll be creating 25% affordable housing in this project. Considering the number of affordable units the developers added or is adding as recognized by the state versus those naturally affordable apartments to be demolished, Washington Place will provide a net gain of 4 affordable units versus 121 market rate ones, a ratio of 1 to 33. The factoid that allows Mark Investments to claim that it's adding another 10% of affordable housing to the 15% recognized by the state is its labeling of as affordable 15 units of workplace housing for those making between 80% and 120% of area median income, or AMI. But those units would not count on the state's subsidized housing index, SHI, and the 24 that would be largely offset by the number of expensive units, and thus not move as much toward meeting the state's affordable housing goals. But it would, however, greatly increase the likelihood of Newton becoming more vulnerable to 30D developments and losing local control over zoning. On the other hand, if the developer were to construct 20% of units at 50% of AMI, or 25% at 80% of AMI, this would qualify all 151 units for the subsidized housing index, SHI, and be a real community benefit for Newtonville and the city, certainly a much bigger benefit than the $700,000 the developer is offering in community benefits right now. Finally, it claimed that workforce housing will be used by Newton's public employees, but there's no mechanism for setting aside these units for any particular group. Moreover, there shouldn't be, as that would run afoul of anti-discrimination laws. If we want to make it easier for public workers to live here, it's more efficient just to pay them more and let them choose where they want to live. So we say no to workforce housing, but we demand that those 10% of units be added to the SHI eligible units instead. We hope our friends in Liverpool, Newtonville, including my friend Tamara, and I want to say that even though I live in a Victorian house on the South Shore, with my cab driver's salary, I cannot afford servants. But we hope our friends in Liverpool, Newtonville, Tamara, and others will join us in fighting developers' stinginess and demand a larger proportion of truly affordable housing here, help us prevent excessive massing and keep our development within the current zoning. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir. Next, please come on up.
Kathleen Krell Grazer, 258 Mill Street, which is the former home of Horace Orr, who built the Orr Block. And I live in thriving Newtonville as well. And I'd like to say Peter Bruce is absolutely right in his analysis about the levels of affordability, what counts on the state SHI, and what is basically not really affordable housing. Workforce housing gets us nothing. It actually weakens our position relative to 40B. And Mr. Settles mentioned, you know, what kind of a project is 25 units of affordable housing? Well, pretty much every project under 40B is quite commonplace. It's all inclusionary zoning percentage of 15%. That's kind of paltry, and I recommend that you make a docket item to make our inclusionary zoning match the state level. But the workforce housing doesn't count. It hurts us, so there's no sense in having that. I sent all of you a letter today, and I don't know if any of you had a chance to read it. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing now because it's about 3 pages long. But I thought I would try to entice you to read it by just giving you a couple of little quotes, which I actually explain in the letter. The first one, all housing costs more in services than it yields in taxes. The higher the density, the worse the fiscal impact. Changing business-owned property to MU4 is fiscally irresponsible. Whether at Court Street, the Avalons, or Elm Street, increasing density is always associated with higher housing prices in Newton. Always. It's even recognized in the mayor's housing strategy report. The relationship between increasing density and rising housing prices in desirable communities has been well documented by economists at the London School of Economics and other major universities. Mr. Corp's project actually endangers our 40B immunity and the city council's control over local land use. Because we have the 1.5%, you have the ability to negotiate higher percentages of affordable units from smaller, greener, better designed projects, and you're not using that leverage. Use it. You already know that Mr. Corp's externalizing many of his costs and we're bearing them. But this policy of allowing speculators to drive up land prices and housing prices is a policy choice. There's nothing inevitable about it. There's nothing inevitable about allowing increasing density. You don't have to follow the policy set out by our mayor who's leaving. We can start afresh. And I really believe that all of you are far too intelligent and care about us too much to vote for this zoning change, knowing as you do that Mr. Corp can do a very profitable, very beautiful project under business zoning. And I have just one last thing, Chairman Laredo. I have a question that I hope can be clarified before the next hearing, and that's about something that I saw in the plans, something about changing public use zoned land to MU4 in this project. There's a request to change everything to MU4, and I thought, well, why is there public use land in there? Is that the little streets, Fairly Place, or whatever? Because if there is any publicly owned land in there, surely it's subject to the state rules about surplusing public property to private development, and surely it has to go to the JAP, see real property reuse, RFI, RFP process. I mean, why is there any mention of public land as part of this property? I just hope it can be clarified. I think it's come up before.
Thank you. So before I get to the next person, I see Ms. I have two questions. I see that Ms. Young wants to, you can sit down.
Thank you.
I want to see, respond to that because it's very important that we not have misinformation or confusing information out there.
And certainly my phone is always open if people have those questions. All streets, whether they're private or public, in the city are in the public use district. The city does not own Bailey Place. That is a private way. It is simply reflecting the zoning that is consistent with every public street in the city or private street that is open to public. That's all. It's not owned by the city.
So just so we have clarity here, because we don't want to have any confusion, no confusion, misinformation. The street that we're talking about is a private way, but it is zoned as all private ways are, as public use.
Yes.
So we're not, just so we're very clear, we are not taking a publicly owned way and giving it to a developer. That's not what's going on here. This is a private way that they own, and the decision is whether to essentially allow them to discontinue the use as a private way, and that's a zoning change.
That discontinuation will be done through the recording of an A&R plan or an 81X plan. That is how those private ways are discontinued.
And that could be done as a matter of right, am I correct?
That's right.
Okay.
Pardon?
The city does not own that land. It's private land. I do want to ask one other question of the planning department, because it was raised and I want clarity. It was said that we are, at the same time we're going to be getting a certain number of affordable units, we're also increasing the total number of units in the city, and so that will add to what has to be considered for the 10%. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes, that is.
So, when we put in that we want people to build 15% inclusionary, we get a little bit more towards our 10%, but not much, because we're building more units. Is that accurate?
That's correct, but the numerator in that equation would be increasing by more than the denominator would, because the denominator, the 32,000 housing units that we have in the city, is so large.
But it's still an increase.
Yes.
So we're, okay, just so we're, I want to be, I think it's an important point. If this was a project with the 20%, is that the threshold of 25?
20% at 50% of A&R.
And if it was that, all the units would count as affordable, and we would see no increase in the, quote, non-affordable units in the city, is that right? We see an increase in the total number of units, but we would have 160 increase
on the numerator.
And what would the if you don't have to do this now, but what would the percentage be?
So we're at about 7.5% now. With the 24 units, we go to 7.6%. If all 160 units count, we would go to about 8%.
Okay. So we could increase the affordability in the city by a full half a percentage if all of these were quote-unquote affordable units.
Correct.
Okay. Just so we have the facts on the table, I'm not advocating for one or the other, but I think it's very important that all of us in the public understand that. That's very helpful. Thank you. Come on up, please. Good evening.
My name is Bonnie Foss, and I've been up here before and come to virtually all of the meetings. And I live on 16 Page Road with my husband. We've been there for 43 years and raised our family here. And I just want to say that a couple of speakers before now, there was a woman who referred to a petition with 900 signatures of Newtonville residents who were opposed to this project as presented and opposed to a zoning change because of the height and the mass and the density. And I just wanted to add to that there was a petition that garnered more than 3,000 signatures from people, including in Newtonville and outside of Newtonville, who are also against this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Come on up, please.
Good evening. My name is Matthew Dunn. I'm an attorney. I represent Patrick Flaherty and the P&K Realty Trust. Mr. Flaherty owns the property at 227 Walnut Street, which is a direct abutter to the project site, and the P&K Trust owns the property located at 221 Walnut Street, which is an abutter to the project site. I'd just like to begin by thanking Ms. Laredo for conducting the hearing and for the committee members for hearing all public comments this evening. As I indicated, Mr. Flaherty owns the property at 227. That's the closest direct abutter to the project site. His property is approximately 45 feet away from the five-story development that the proposed zoning change will allow. According to the developer's own shadow study that he was gracious enough to provide to the planning board and to the land use committee, the size of that building will cast a perpetual shadow over Mr. Flaherty's entire property for the entire day during the winter months, particularly in December, and that's we have retained our own experts to confirm that fact. Mr. Flaherty has also retained his own experts to to assess the impact of the traffic generated by the project and the roadway configuration. Both of those have indicated that it will create substantial problems to Mr. Slaherty's use and enjoyment of his property. I'd invite the committee members, just for the sake of brevity of time, to review my letters to the Land Use Committee. One was submitted on January 12th of this year. The other one was submitted today and was circulated, I believe, by Ms. Kahn. I'd ask that those letters be posted on the website for this project so the public could understand and appreciate my client's concerns. One, with respect to the proposed zoning change, I'd just like to echo the comments that were made by committee members Crosby and Schwartz, but to put a name to what I think that we've been when talking about. I think it's impossible to divorce the zoning change from the proposed project, which raises issues with regards to spot zoning. And I would ask that town council inform or direct the committee with respect to that issue, because the zoning change from the current existing zoning to the M4 provides a specific economic benefit to the current developer that is not available to others in the proximity. I would just like an explanation as to why that occurred and why or how the proposed zoning area for the M4, how the boundaries were drawn. Again, Mr. Slaherty and the trust own property up to Foster Street, which would be exponentially more valuable had the M4 area been extended to that area, which it wasn't. With regards to the actual impact, I refer to the letters that I submitted, but briefly, the increased height, I referenced the shadow that it will cause, the proximity of the building to Mr. Slaherty's property, the access point that is being proposed off of Walnut Street is directly adjacent to his existing driveway to the carriage house on 227 Walnut. The location of the underground garage is going to cast light as vehicles exit the driveway directly into his carriage house, and the occupants are going to be affected by that. And then there's also the issue, and perhaps this has to do with site plan, but with regards to the impact of the demolition and construction activities that are going to be taking place on site. Again, the proximity of Mr. Slaherty's property and the condition of those property, he has a fieldstone foundation, are going to be dramatically impacted unless some mitigation is agreed to by the developer with regards to the impact on those properties, and we have retained professional engineers to assess that. So with that, I would thank the committee and just ask that they take the matters that were presented in my two correspondence under consideration of Mr. Flaherty's behalf.
Okay, thank you, sir. Come on up, please, next. Good evening.
My name is Helen Nyer, and I live at 75 Grove Hill Avenue in Newtonville. I want to very briefly say this comment, which I understand to be correct. If only 15% of this whole project goes forth, it will not be appropriate if they need to, we will not get the accounting that we need for affordable housing. If they meet the standard of 20 to 25%, the state standard, then we will do so. I want to go on from that and say that we're asking once again that this committee deny the application for rezoning because, above all, it's not in the best interest of the village of Newtonville or of the city of Newton. The facts of this issue have been presented many, many times, not the, as we know today, the alternative facts. The facts of this issue support our request. For example, contrary to the developer's pitch and what we're hearing from our own planning department, this area is not transit-oriented. We have spoken many times about the description for transit-oriented development of the Department of Transportation. I'm sure everyone can look it up if you have the interest. Also, giving people some kind of a break on their rent or their parking for the commuter rail, which runs, by the way, only east and west, and when it runs, because it doesn't run that often, will not solve the critical problem of traffic. Note also that the MBTA's new schedule has reduced the stops in Newton even further than they were before. So all of these stories that we're told really defy logic. The traffic at this juncture of Walnut and Washington Street is already very heavy. We who live here and travel this area daily experience this heavy traffic now. The developer's traffic survey does not hold water in the face of our daily experience. Changing a couple of lights and putting in bike lanes to nowhere and butt outs will not mitigate this traffic. In fact, adding at least 200 cars and probably more for the residents of this proposed development will create traffic congestion that we cannot currently imagine. It will also create many safety risks for the children going to and from F.A. Day, Horace Mann, and Newton North High School, who currently traverse these areas, these roads.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up, ma'am, please.
Okay. Now, an architect just spoke about how beautiful this was going to be, and in the process, he, I'm afraid, slipped a little bit, and he talked about that this was a sensitive urban design. We do not want our village to become a sensitive urban design. We don't want it to become urban at all. We don't want it to be an urban cement town. Now, there are many reasons to deny Mr. Korf's request that others have written about and talked about. Among them is something that somebody else said tonight, but I think bears repeating, and that is that over 3,000 Newton residents have signed a petition requesting this committee to deny the request for rezoning. And in a 2014 survey by Beautiful Newtonville, 80% of the respondents said they would prefer a development of three stories or less. I think it's an important point to listen to the citizens and taxpayers of Newton and Newtonville, which will be most highly impacted. So we are asking...
Sam, I'm going to ask you to wrap up. I'm really trying to keep people to 3 minutes and
we're
well over.
We're asking this committee to carry out both of its fiduciary responsibilities, and I didn't talk about that paragraph, to the city and to the residents, and its promise to protect the welfare and benefit of the residents of this city. Thank you, ma'am.
Next, please. Come on up. Really going to urge people to try to keep your remarks to 3 minutes or less. I am keeping track of time in the interest of trying to make sure everybody gets heard. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is John Vasilakis. I live on Gulf Hill Avenue in Newtonville. And I'm asking you to vote against the rezoning and the special permit requested for the ore building development. The developer shows what appears to be a dense five-story building that he wants to build. I believe that he can build well within the existing zoning law, which he knew when he bought this property, and he can make that building just as pretty. Newton is currently undertaking a rezoning of the city. This will result in a master plan that everyone can use as a guide in planning development and making for a uniform set of rules for the city instead of the spot zoning that we have seen lately. Projects such as this should wait for that new plan. The goal of Newton councilors should be the unification of the downtown village areas, making them attractive places for the residents to visit, stroll to, shop, etc. In Newtonville Center especially, efforts should be made
the breach of the section is divided by the mass pike for half of the tract of walkways on both sides of the road, existing road, to affect this unification. The negative aspects of erecting a five-story building have been brought out many times at these planning use committee sessions. Much has been said about the traffic problems, the fact that it's not a transit-oriented development area, the negative effect on the abutters in the historic district, and the ignored hazardous waste problems, among other things. Also, little has been said about the economic cost to the city that eventually will be borne by the residents. The developer says that the new building will be an annual plus $200,000 to the city. If that's true, for what the city and the residents will have to go through and be left with this paltry amount is not nearly enough. In fact, I believe that this figure is very optimistic considering the cost of the city services, again, borne by the residents.
Thank you, sir. Next, please. Come on up. Good evening.
Hello, my name is Susan Flint. I currently live at 543 Center Street in Newton Corner. I've been living there for almost 20 years. I grew up here in Newton, so I've been here over 50 years now, and usually around Newtonville area. I'm here to support the project, and I think it's exactly what Newtonville needs. It's really close to the commuter rail and the express buses downtown. I know a ton of people that don't even consider Newton anymore because it's just completely out of their price range. I think that it's the perfect thing to have Newton be more progressive, and I think that Newton has a really good reputation, but it can't rely on its reputation anymore. It has to keep progressing, or else people aren't going to consider being here anymore. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Come on up, please, sir. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is James Pacheco. As I thought you should ask, Newton Highlands. I've spoken to you before about many pollution issues, both in the soil and off the highway, that affects the residents. Some in those puts the line, I'm against the NU4, because it's really not appropriate for this area. This past weekend, the NBN, neighborhood for a better meeting show, walked some of the lanes looking to see what a 60-foot tall structure looked like. And it was quite windy, but we did see some visibility. I seen some photographs of that. And we were all invited to see that. In fact, it was quite educational for me, being a retired engineer consultant, to appreciate that phenomenon. Because both the winds just dwarfed the entire neighborhood. And they were only about 50 feet, because the wind wasn't allowing that. And I'm saying, 60 feet? I'm saying, that's another 10 feet on top of that. It's kind of like, wow, astounding. It just was totally inappropriate in terms of signs. And then on the back side, looking at some of these photographs, and I'm saying to myself, I cannot imagine what the evening night looks like. It's going to be like light pollution. In fact, I think NU4 needs to have in its documentation on restrictions on building structures, where this building structure is going to be a transition area into the neighborhood, that we need to have either light glass windows that prevent the light from so-called causing light pollution in the neighborhood, or we need to have lights out, restriction in the building, no lights after 10 p.m. I guess that would go a little well, wouldn't it? But, we need to really look at business use only and to limit the heights, because that's the most appropriate thing for this neighborhood. It's been good for 100 years, and let's not go beyond that. Let's have some common sense in our council here, and I thank you for listening to my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good evening.
Hi, my name is Deborah Pierce. I'm an architect and I live in 128 Westland Avenue in West Newton. I used to live in Newton Center, own a building on Washington Street. I've lived here 39 years and I've seen lots of change. And it's always scary to see that something that we love is leaving or that something we don't know is coming.
And I want to say that I feel that every decision, most, I can't think of an exception, the decisions that have been made have been positive. My house used to back up to Weeks Field, and when the Weeks Junior High School was being converted to apartments, the neighbors were all up in arms on that. Turned out to be great neighbors. We liked going over there and voting. I want to say that I think Newton serves its residents best when it does take bold action. Newton South, the library, which was the new library, you know, 15, 20 years ago, the new building in Newton Corner, which replaced something smaller and a little more dumpy. These have been good moves for the city, and we're all better for it. I think I'm speaking in favor of the proposed development. My firm designed the brand block across the street at 246. That used to be the Maple Garage. It was a small two-story building surrounded by parking. So I see that this project is, as proposed, is really making a lot of improvements on the present situation. It's going to block the highway noise from the street. There's going to be landscaped parking instead of grassy, cracked pavement and little one-story garages and trash behind them. There's going to be accessible apartments and small apartments that we can live in as we get older. And there are going to be retail stores with air conditioning. This is progress, and it's good. I favor the project. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Alderman Johnson.
Good evening. I'm Marcia Johnson, 39 Venus Street. Actually, I live in Newton, a 30,000-person city, so I guess it's part of Newtonville's part of that, but I'd like to think I'm from Newton. I spent 14 years on the Zoning and Planning Committee of this honorable council and board, six of them as chair. And I can tell you that our zoning is quite antiquated. And the tools in our toolkit go back many years. We wouldn't want to go back to an abacus or just pencils. We'd like our technology. So we need to update our tools. And it took us 6 years to get phase one of zoning reform done. So it's going to take a while for zoning reform two. And I know it will be great, and you will deliberate, and you will come out with a wonderful result. In the meantime, we have to have additional tools. The ME4 was created. Many of you sitting in this chamber right now voted for that. And I ask that you please use that tool to upgrade this city to the 21st century. Thank you.
Thank you. How many other people want to speak? All right. Come on up, please. I'm gonna cut us off at about quarter of. We have to have time to work on this board order tonight. And if you don't get to speak, let me just be clear. If you don't get to speak this evening, I'm going to ask our committee clerk to step outside. She'll take your names. You'll be the first people called next time. That's how we did it last time. Good evening.
Hello, my name is Ann Duvall. I live at 33 Madison Avenue, which is pretty much the heart of Newtonville, or part of the heart. I just wanted to comment that I don't also would like, I do not agree that we need an urban environment in our part of Newtonville, or anywhere in the city of Newton, for that matter. I just wanted to talk about what people have been describing as a comparison between the Masonic Hall. The planning department and others have referenced the Masonic Hall's height as a landmark of a similar size to the proposed Washington Place. But per the assessor's office database, the Masonic Hall is located on a lot of 11,718 square feet with the gross building area of 31,521 square feet. So that's as big as it gets. Per the zoning review memo for Washington Place, that was from May 12, 2016, this project is on a lot of an area of 123,956 square feet. With the building, it's a gross area of 238,075 square feet. That's, you can't compare the two. It's really ridiculous.
Washington Place is obviously many times larger than the Masonic building in terms of the massing. The Masonic hall height does not justify a zone change to MU4 for this development. I would like to add that I don't think the MU4 is a tool. I think it's part of the planning department or part of our planning comprehensive plans that we have to make in the planning area. It's not a tool. I think it should be, we should go as it's a tour review process of what we're doing and decide where MU4 is appropriate. Then go back and then developers can come and say, yes, I want to build MU4 here, BU1 here, BU2 here. We're doing this for, as a favor to the developers. That is not what Newtonville wants. This is not a favor. We want to have something that is appropriate, will obviously allow for apartments that are very, I think, would be well utilized and also have the affordable housing, but this is something that we have to look at as not a favor to developers. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to take two more comments and I'm going to cut it off for this evening. Come on up, please. And again, Ms. Connell, step outside and take the names of anyone who doesn't get to speak tonight. We'll take those folks first. Good evening.
Hello, my name is Joyce Huber. I live at 27 Whitney Road, 26 years. I'm a member of the Newtonville Area Council. I want to make sure I'm not speaking for the Area Council. We are divided, as is much as Newtonville. I want to say that this is a good development. I have watched Austin Street study that. I've looked at this development, studied this. This is a better development than Austin Street. If you go to Austin Street, you should go for this one. It's a better developer, more responsive. The exterior is better, the community space is better. They proposed a 4-story building, but the 5-story building is better. And I guess that's all I want to say. So if you voted for Austin Street, you should be voting for this one too.
Thank you, ma'am. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Aaron Clark. I'm the president of the Newtonville Area Council. We sent you a memo today regarding the community benefits. This is actually in response to your question, Chairman, about comments about the board order. On Schedule D of the $700,000 of the improvements of the drafted board order, There's a line 4 that says building the utility lines on the south side of Washington Street from opposite Washington Terrace to Walnut Street. We drafted a memo and sent it to you today advocating certain community benefits. We don't feel, after studying the situation, that line item 4, the building of the utilities, should be part of the budget for the community benefits. We think those funds would be better allocated in other areas, which we have sent to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We are going to, Ms. Kahn has stepped outside. If there's any member of the public who did not speak tonight but wishes to speak, next time Ms. Kahn will get your name and we'll take you in that priority. With that, Ms. Anant or Ms. Young, who's taking us through the board order?
Mr. Chairman, can I just make a request?
Of course,
briefly. Anybody that wants to send us comments, good or bad, friendly or not so friendly, I got 72 emails today. I was late getting here because I had to work late at my full-time job. If you could get comments and emails to us well before the day we're coming in here for a meeting, I couldn't read all these today, so I apologize, but please, I know you all have a lot of great things to say, but can you get them to us maybe like the weekend before or a couple of days before we meet again? It would be really helpful for me and probably others.
And this kind is fabulous about forwarding things to us very promptly. So, all right, good point. Thank you, Councilor Harney. Who's taking us through this?
So I will begin, and maybe Rita will be the relief pitcher for me. And Nadia will get it up on the screen when she comes back. I don't know how to do that.
So,
you can't put it up on the screen?
I have no idea.
Ms. Young, could you go out, Mr. Waddick, would you mind maybe seeing a relief picture for Ms. Kahn, just saying the name?
And that way she can get us set up technically.
I can write the name.
Folks, just so you all know what our time's going to be, we are going to finish by 10 o'clock tonight. That's our custom. We all have other, at least a number of us have actually day jobs to get to tomorrow. Need some rest. Whether it's beauty rest or not, we need some rest. All right. Colleagues, I think you all have a draft board order in your materials. But it will be easier. Ms. Connell, step back in a moment. We'll go through it on the screen. I got you some help there, Ms. Kahn, so Mr. Waddick will take over your duties for a moment. We have to walk through it, so... Colleagues, can you all grab a seat, please? Yeah, me too. And we've been joined by Councillor Lyle Baker, President Emeritus of the Board. He's leaving us? All right. He's not a member of the committee, so I know he wanted to hear some public comment. I know he teaches on Tuesday evening, so thank you for coming in after a long day of work. Colleagues, we're going to be going through these, and let me just be really clear that... Ms. Anant has done, with Ms. Young's help, has done a tremendous job trying to draft this. This is a very complicated board order. I would suggest this evening we try not to spend too much time wordsmithing the precision, but rather put concepts out there and then allow Ms. Anant and Ms. Young to take our feedback and revise accordingly. They spent a lot of time on this. We want to get it right, as I said earlier. When it comes to the full council, we do not want to be debating the text of the board order at the full council. And I know President Lennon's nodding his head saying, yes, Mr. Chairman, that's just right. So I appreciate that support. All right, Ms. Anant, do you want to just take us through, please?
Sure. So the first, we're in the findings, correct?
Yes.
So the first finding is with respect to the comprehensive plan and the elements of the MU4 district. It's a required finding for the MU4 zone change.
Do we need to make a finding for the zone change as part of the special permit process?
Yes.
Okay. So this is the finding we're making for the zone change.
So for the MU4. For the MU4, yeah.
Okay.
The zone change. For the MU4, yeah. These are the MU4 findings.
Okay. So, understanding that we may not all agree on the conclusions that are being drawn, let's try to at least craft language that we think will be presentable to the board.
On the first finding, is there a reason why it's put in the negative that this is not inconsistent with as opposed to is consistent with?
Historically, we've been making the finding that way.
But this is a zone change. So I think the question, unlike a special permit where the question is it not inconsistent, we're being asked to make an affirmative zone change, and I think it's a fair question from Councillor Yates. Do we need to make an affirmative finding for a zone change? And you know, I don't think we have to answer that question this evening, but it is an important textual question.
Sure.
I think
I'll review that. This is the way we did it with Austin Street, but I will double check that.
Yeah, that doesn't mean we did it. if we didn't do it right, I'll take full responsibility since I chaired this committee, but. It doesn't mean we necessarily get it right. I think it's an important question. Okay. Others on the first finding. I'm having a bit of a problem here with why this is going to connect the businesses and residences on the north side with the south side. Could you amplify that a little bit, please, Ms. Anand?
Yeah, so I specifically cited the streetscape improvements associated with the project to help connect the uses, and by streetscape, I also meant the pedestrian streetscape improvements, and I'm thinking of the consistency in the design along Walnut Street, as well as all the pedestrian improvements to help people.
So I can see the argument, at least this is my view, I can see the argument that the streetscape improvements will be somehow connecting. I don't see the project necessarily connecting anything. But if my colleagues differ, I'm open to that. Councillor Crosby?
One of the things the Newtonville Area Council actually, I thought, articulated very well was the importance of a strong massing at the corner in order to... I mean, it's really hard across the Mass Pike, but that they emphasize the need for the massing there in particular to relate back to the Village Center. That if you had something that was too small, that it wouldn't. I'm sure you could agree or disagree, but that was the point they made.
I'm not looking for a debate. I think that the point is very well taken. I'm just trying to make sure we articulate it correctly. Councillor Albright.
So I would just go a little further and say it's not just the massing on the corner, but it's the massing across that block, which visually connects both sides of the turnpike.
All right. Are we comfortable as a committee that that's the argument we'd make, regardless of whether we agree with the premise or not, Councillor Schwartz?
Would it help to say the massing of the project or the?
Would that be better if we're trying to create a...
Five-story massing on Washington Street, and particularly the emphasis of the corner.
If that's the justification for the zone change, it seems to me that's what we're articulating. Okay. Thank you, Councillor.
Let me just clarify one thing in terms of these findings. What is happening here is these are the purposes of the MU4, but this finding is actually showing how the project itself is furthering the purposes of the MU4. So let me just clarify this. This isn't so much justifying the zone change. This is justifying how this project furthers the purposes of the MU4 district.
Okay.
That's helpful.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Let's go to the next one, please. Yes, Councillor Schwartz.
Just one thought on that is that we heard a little bit of discussion about, you know, how do we think of this particular project site as opposed to other potential sites down Washington Street. And I thought I heard that part of the explanation is that this is part of the Village Center as opposed to other parts might not be. And MU4 is Village Center oriented. So would it be... at this point, in this finding, that we might buttress that further, that this is, as you said, Ms. Young, this is trying to explain how this project furthers the MU4. Should we, is it strong enough about how this is furthering or is part of the Village Center, and that's why it's appropriate to the MU4, which would distinguish it from some other potential sites, which I think would help people who are concerned about the precedent-setting nature of this.
Good idea. We can add the location.
Why don't we try to address that? Okay. Sure. So we're moving on to C. Again, we're not asking for an opinion. I want to be just crystal clear. We're not asking for an opinion whether you agree with this. We're asking, is this a finding that if one were to vote in favor of this project, this is what would be a rational reason for that? Okay. D. I think F, we haven't seen the 3D massing model yet. At least for now, and I'm not sure we've seen the neighborhood views adequately either. I don't recall what neighborhood views we've seen.
I'll make sure they're available for the next meeting.
Okay. Why don't we just at least put a note here that unless we see that, we're going to have a hard time on F. And let's go back on F if we could. The language in F, and you have a footnote there. What's that footnote reflect?
It
references an excerpt from the comprehensive plan from Section 2, Excellence in Placemaking.
If we're going to do that, rather than drop a footnote, I think we should just say is consistent with the comprehensive plan statement on page 2 that. Okay? I don't think we tended to put footnotes in our board order. Councilor Yates and Schwartz.
Yeah, just a couple of, I guess, just wordsmithing things. Shouldn't be respectful of, and in the quotations, shouldn't be does not damage as opposed to should not damage.
What's the quote?
Well, maybe you ought to...
Can we start the quote after does?
Yeah.
We're asserting that it does not do that because it shouldn't, right?
Sir, fair correction. Thank you. Councilor Schwartz?
Just a question. Is this quote there because there's a kind of a requirement that we find that for MU4 to be served, that it's in accordance with the plan, this comprehensive plan, or is that just...
No, it's just a quote I chose. I wanted to mention the historic district, the adjacent historic district, and this quote I thought fit nicely with that reference.
My concern is that why choose that quote when there's at least some controversy about that in the comments that we've heard?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, I suppose those voting for it when the time comes might agree with it, but if it's not required, I don't know if I would put that in there.
I'm also having a problem with the impacts about shadows, since we heard a very clear statement from a neighbor that this is going to cause shadowing on their property for a significant portion of the year. Have we done shadow studies, and have we concluded that there's no changes?
There aren't significant negative impacts. I'm not saying there aren't any.
Well, but wait a minute. What do you mean by there aren't significant impacts? What does that mean?
So we'd have to go back and look at the shadow study.
I guess I'd say that we need to be very careful about that, because significant impact seems to me a very subjective standard.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
We did, several meetings ago, get extensive shadow studies from the developer that we all had and looked at, and it showed very minimal intrusion on any of the adjacent properties.
We heard somebody get up tonight, and it was on the
one point on Walnut Street where it's 45 feet away, there's shadow in the winter. But we can all look at those shadow studies. We have them printed out on our desks or wherever.
Well, I certainly think before we make the finding, we want to have a comfort level on that. So I think that's a fair point, Councilor Crosley. Why don't we go back and try to, maybe Ms. Anand, Councilor Lipoff, you want to add something? Okay.
Yep.
No, that's helpful. What I was going to say, Ms. Anand, is if you could just go back and try to quantify it for us, I think that would be helpful, so we all are operating off the same language.
Mm-hmm.
Councilor Schwartz?
I'll just say this. I mean, I can imagine there might be some councilors who end up voting for the board order who might not feel that the shadow effects are not significant. So my point is, if this is necessary, it's required by the ordinance, put it in, but if it's not, I think it's not a settled point.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I also question the word respectful? I don't know what that means, and I don't know whether we've done it or not, so...
Let me ask you this. Do we need F at all? I mean, no criticism intended here. I know that you're working very diligently to try to get us something.
I'll have to double check if we need F. I don't have my ordinance in front of me. It may not be me.
I think if we don't need it, since there seems to be so much controversy, and I share Councilor Schwartz's statement that there may be councilors who vote in favor of this, even if there are shadows, and they say it's nevertheless a good project overall, we want to be careful what we're saying. And I do agree with you, Councilor Albright, about the word respectful. It's a word that's judgmental, and we're trying to avoid that. Councilor Crosley?
So I agree with
not using judgmental words. On the other hand, I don't think we should take this out in its entirety. We did, and we can revisit, but we did do our due diligence and review those shadow studies, and we should make a finding pertaining to that, because that's a clear metric. And much of what we do is not clear, but shadow...
If we're comfortable with a factual finding on what the shadows are, then I'm fine with that. But I want some statement that says, we did this study, this is where the shadows are, they do not impinge on any building, for example, except for 1 month a year, if that's...
Whatever it is.
I'm making it up, but that's
yeah.
the idea.
I just do think we should
okay.
have a finding.
Fine. So, Ms. Anand, why don't you try to get the data for us, and then we can work with it.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go on to two, please. So let's just read the first paragraph. I got to tell you, I for one am not at all comfortable citing to the city's housing needs analysis at all. I think we've had a lot of issues with that document, quite frankly.
I can take it out.
I'm not comfortable with it. You all can cite to it, but I'm not. Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure what your problems are with the housing, the city's housing analysis, but we have several other documents, including going to the MAPC and the Dukakis report. We have other reports which cite the need for housing in Newton, and if you don't like the city's report, then certainly we have other ones.
I think if you want to just state it, we just state it. I don't think we ought to be citing to various reports. If we want to say that it meets a need, then we say that. But I don't want to be relying on a particular study that the city put out. Councilor Schwartz and then Auchincloss.
I agree with Councilor Albright that there are, I think, more established kind of, perhaps, for better, for want of a better word, more objective or potentially, established reports like the MAPC that you referred to that we can refer to that are adequate for this purpose.
I mean, I'll defer to the will of the committee. I'm really uncomfortable with referring to the various reports that have been put out by different interest groups out there. I don't think
the Dukakis Center at Northeastern is an interest group. I mean, we've gotten, I'm counting three in my head, separate reports that say that Newton needs housing. Maybe we triangulate by mentioning all of them, or maybe we don't mention them by name, but I think it's certainly appropriate to say people who aren't us have said that we need housing, and that's an outside expertise that we value.
We could also just put a period after residential units.
I think that would be a factual statement that we're making as a finding, and I'm comfortable with that personally. I mean, that's the finding that we as a council would make. We may be informed in that finding by a variety of different sources, and different people may reach that conclusion based on different sources. That's my concern. Councilor Yates?
The sentence as it's written, however, does not say fulfills the need for affordable housing. It says specifically smaller, accessible, energy efficient units. So if you're going to refer to meeting the need of affordability, then those things are nice, but they're not the same thing as
affordable. I think it's a separate issue, Councillor Yates. I think that this project is trying to fulfill two different needs.
Yes, it's a valid need, but what was just referenced is not the same thing.
Well, I'll defer to my colleagues, but I certainly would prefer just a period after the word units and delete everything that's demonstrated.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. Councillor Schwartz?
Related to Councillor Yates' point, though, would it be clearer if we break out a number three at furthermore for the affordable housing needs?
I'm sorry. Do we get to the affordable piece later on?
It's in the furthermore sentence, right?
Right?
And then it gets broken down by A and B. So I wonder if that should be a separate paragraph.
I think that makes good sense. Councillor Lennon?
Yeah, is your issue with the word demonstrated? Or, 'cause I don't actually have a problem referencing the report,
but maybe demonstrated isn't what you're looking for. Maybe it's reference or something along that line.
I'm
just playing devil's advocate. If you cut it off, period, at residential units, you could have some colleagues that say, why do you say that? How are you coming up with that? At least for us, we're giving a reference point.
Personally, I think that's a finding we're making, and different people can reach that conclusion based on different documents. I had issues with the city's housing needs analysis and strategic recommendations report, quite frankly, and I think I voiced those at the time. And I would prefer to leave it as a sentence, but it's the way of my colleagues, why don't we just take a straw vote on it? If you want to leave it in, we'll leave it in and we'll move on. Who wants to leave it in? I got 1, 2, 3, 4 in favor of leaving it, 5, then leave it, all right? That's the beauty of democracy. Go ahead, Councilor Schwartz.
Just as far as belts and suspenders, though, I mean, I think we should reference the other two reports that were also mentioned, the Chautauqua Center and the MAPC. As the president proposed, the word identified is nice because it's a little bit less judgment. I think it might make some people feel more comfortable.
I think identified is a better word. How do folks feel about referencing the other studies as well? Is that something you want to do?
Kind of have to.
All right. So can I just get a show of hands quickly on that? Okay. Why don't we do this? I think the will of the committee is we delete the word demonstrated. We substitute the word identified. We leave in the reference to the housing plan, and we reference at least the other two plans that we've also talked about. Fair enough? Okay.
Got it.
Mr. Chairman, I think that this whole number is, and the subsections are intended to deal with affordability, but the first sentence does not. It says smaller, accessible, energy efficient. You could either, add affordability there, or being small and energy efficient is not the same thing as being affordable.
I think Councilor Yates, there's, in fairness, those reports have talked about making available in the city different types of housing, including housing that's elevator accessible, housing that is of different sizes, because by definition that encourages different living units. Family living units?
I think that may all be true and beneficial. I'm just saying that number two as a whole seems to me to be dealing with affordability, and smaller, energy efficient, and accessible is not the same thing as affordability.
Maybe we can separate them.
All right. I would separate them out.
All right.
Councilor Schwartz, I think your idea was a good one.
That was my point.
So let's assume for the sake of discussion we separate it out. We start with the new three. We then don't need the word furthermore, and we can just jump into the councilor's petition of taking additional steps by establishing the two tiers. I take it that's language that's drawn from the ordinance, is that right?
Yes.
And the second one is okay.
The middle income right. Units.
Questions on A or B, folks? Councilor Cosby?
I'm not sure if it's, taken up later, but I think relevant to affordability is long-term affordability. And if I'm not sure if you were trying to relate the energy efficiency to long-term affordability, but I think it's a point that we could make given the deep analysis that has been given to us about the individual units and how little energy they'll use. And that is something that I know the Housing Partnership always talked about as it was looking at how do you create real affordability over time. So I don't know if you were going there, and I don't want to wordsmith it right now, but I think it's a fair point to make.
So your point was that energy-efficient housing is both good generally and also helps make housing more affordable?
Yes.
Fair enough. I don't think anybody's quarrel with that.
With it.
Go ahead, Councilor Auchincloss.
Should we add... Well, question. These are affordable in perpetuity.
Want to add that language? Sure.
It is later on, but we can add it in the findings as well.
I think in the findings it's good to note that. That's an important point. Go ahead. Anything else?
We're not on number three yet, right? I can't lean ahead.
Pardon?
I can't lean ahead to number three.
Okay. No, you can't be ahead number three, but I'll call in you first. How's that? Go ahead, Councilor Schwartz.
I think Councilor Crawford.
Sure, Councilor Auchincloss.
Councilor Crawford's point about energy efficiency is well taken, although I just would be careful about using the word affordable in that context, since it has like a specific meaning in the usage in this particular part of the discussion, so perhaps make it less expensive or something, or more sustainable, you know, as far as budgetary, you know,
okay.
lower budget, something other than affordable, because I think you get very confused with mixing those concepts.
Good point. You okay with that, Councilor Clausen? Great. That's a very, I like, a very factual statement. I like that. All right, Councilor Auchincloss, we're going right to three, and you get to jump in. Tell us what you want.
I'm confused by the phrase upward mobility within the project. Does that mean that people would like come in at the 80% AMI and do better and get to that 120%? Or?
Correct. If they incomed out of a inclusionary unit, they would be eligible to move to the local preference to a middle income unit, which is something that other projects don't offer. So that's where I meant the upward mobility.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
What if the apartment is downstairs? Is that downward mobility?
Councilor Schwartz, come on, we got 50 minutes, no joke. Councilor Yates?
Okay, that's directly out of DHCD language, but I can...
Why don't we track the language of the ordinance, so we're... If the ordinance needs recrafting, put a request in there. Alright, folks, are folks okay with three? Folks?
Yeah.
Okay with three?
Well...
Yes, Councilor Cody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So three looks like, to me, just kind of like some kind of abstract statement on whatever, because you're kind of saying that people are going to sit in there in a one-bedroom affordable thing, and they feel like I've made it big, now I can move up to a two-bedroom and pay market rate. I mean, that's...
Oh, I think what they're saying is if you're in the lowest tier and your income goes up so that you could no longer be in
the building.
You could still stay in the building because there's other units there.
But that's like... That's like, you know, it's like, I don't think that's kind of ridiculous, actually.
Pardon, Councilor? Pardon? Yeah, I have some concern about that, too. I don't think that's necessarily true.
No, I think it's ridiculous.
I mean, there's going to be, how many, we're talking, what, 16 of these units of varying sizes? I mean, the odds are that you're in a two-bedroom unit that's at the 80%, below 80% mark, and you're ready to move, and you have to move because you're priced out at 80%. There's no guarantee that anything's going to be available.
So, Mr. Chair, Alexander did use the word an opportunity.
Yeah.
He didn't say it's guaranteed.
I think it's an important distinction to make that this project has, that you do have the opportunity to move into a middle-income unit, which is a much broader range of income, that's 80 to 120, that exists. And you're right. Those units may exist, they may not. It depends on turnover. You may have someone in the 80 to 120 that has to leave because their income exceeds the 120 as well. So it's going to be constant turnover.
Would perhaps the word potential be better than opportunity? Because opportunity implies that's going to be there, whereas... Potential is more of a possibility, but not...
I mean, potential is an accurate factual statement.
We're going with potential.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be afforded the option to transition. They're not. I mean, they may have the options possible, but they're not going to be given the option. Yeah, I think we have to be very careful in the word setting here.
Maybe.
Unless, Mr. Chair, unless there's some commitment by the developer
to make this possible.
I don't see how you could do that, because you can't time the rentals properly.
I mean, if this is a true value that they're promoting, then perhaps they should commit to it.
I think we'd be asking for an administrative nightmare, frankly. And I mean, the developer can say whatever they want, but
I think the concept scope of the example I'm thinking, you have someone who's one of the lower units, they move up, they're eligible for the middle income are all taken. Maybe you could establish a wait list for it, but you couldn't bump somebody.
We're assuming there's going to be turnover, but there may be very little turnover in a lower income unit. I mean, I don't know what our current turnover is in other, so-called affordable units in the city that are subsidized in this manner, but do you have any idea what the level of turnover is?
I don't, but I believe that the potential is there.
I would say particularly in that middle income range, there will be probably more likely some turnover.
What are you basing that on?
If you look at the income ranges for the middle income, you can see the types of positions. So it may be somebody that's on their initial first job and they get the second job and they move up the ladder. So, I mean, it's like anything. You can't really predict. But
well, what's our experience been with the below 80? Do we see much movement?
Maybe our housing planner can speak to that. I know that when we looked at what Cambridge has, their experience with their middle income, their applicant pool was much smaller for the middle income units, which would lead me to believe there will be more turnover in those units.
I guess I can't follow that logic. I would be very interested to see what our actual experience is with our lower income units and what the level of turnover is, because I think that informs this kind of decision making. I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, Ms. Reese, but I can't just accept that as a given without any data. Yes, Councillor Schwartz, did you want to say something? Councillor Auchincloss?
I guess we just haven't talked about this in any of the hearings, so that's why it's kind of new to all of us. But, I mean, I think it's intriguing. I don't want to dismiss it out of hand, because I do think that it's, I mean, if you think about what the benefit for Newton, maybe it's somewhat unusual, but maybe it's actually a benefit that people won't feel locked into not taking a job that could provide them with better income and stay put in the same school system, the same social situation, the same address even. So I think it's hard to make operational, like you're saying, and I don't know how we would actually, encourage that, or I hear we're not requiring it, so encourage that, or how to make it part of this project. It hasn't been presented to us as one of the benefits, but it's intriguing. I would admit that.
Councilor Auchincloss and Cody.
Question. How often do we or would we audit the residents' income to determine if they were still eligible for those units?
They are audited annually.
And who does the auditing?
DHCD.
You need to speak, sir. You need to come up to the microphone if you want to say something, please.
That's Nathan Robinson. He's our housing planner and resident expert on DHCD matters.
I'm sorry. Good evening, sir.
Nathan Robinson, I'm the housing planner of the city. So the developer would be required annually to review tenant income prior to lease renewal. So typically it happens 90 days before lease renewal. So if tenants are over income, they know that their lease would not be reviewed. So
and you do this on kind of an ongoing basis as leases cycle in?
Yeah, as leases cycle, and then they would submit a annual report to the city that we would review and then submit.
And just to clarify, I don't want to belabor this, federal income tax returns? Is it just a statement? What do you look at?
Typically, five most recent paid statements, all asset accounts, and then prior year income tax returns. So you're sort of triangulating and you're projecting income forward.
That's great. That's helpful. Thank you very much. Councilor Auchincloss, do you have something else you want to add?
That raised another question, sorry.
No apologies needed. Go ahead.
Is it income or assets?
There's no assets are included insofar as they generate income. So there's no strict asset limit, but if you have an asset that is generating income that puts you over the limit, then you could potentially be, you know, not allowed. So it's different with home ownership versus rental units.
So dividend or interest income on your assets is going to kind of income for you, but having $1 million in the bank itself as an asset is not counted?
Right. It depends on how much income that would generate.
So if I was silly enough to put $1 million in the savings bank, assuming I had $1 million to put in the savings bank, and I was dependent on Social Security, I'd qualify?
Depending upon how much income it's generating. If DHCD does income requirements in accordance with HUD 45C3, a code of federal regulations.
How much of UCC is that?
It's challenging. I mean, it's part of the work. But I mean, the property management companies are all pretty rigorous because it's part of the requirement. So,
I think there's a debate for another day.
We're not going to
debate this now, and we appreciate the hard work you do in trying to comply with the federal regulations. Councilor Cody?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, actually, we see them use deferred annuities where you don't have to take an income, you can just keep growing it. Very common. But anyway, but my point...
most assuredly not. Go ahead.
No, so basically, number three to me just appears to be like we're trying to market these units. So I don't think they belong, that whole paragraph belongs in there, because that's like assuming this is potentially like a 200-story building with a lot of apartments in it, and you aspire to stay in that same apartment. Whereas the reality is, if you were looking for another apartment, you would just be looking in the general area to stay in the school. So I think the whole number three is just a marketing paragraph, and it doesn't do anything.
Why don't we do this, folks? We have a lot to do here. Well, let's ask the planning department to try to craft it a little bit, and when we go to this next time, we'll take an up or down, you know, committee vote on whether we want it or not, okay? Let's go on to what's our form of four. So, that's a factual statement. Does anybody have any issue with that? Okay, folks, any issues? Colleagues, any issues? Don't leave me doing this all by myself. You won't like what I create. All right. All right, five, please.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask on four, or the old four?
Yep, sure.
So is that something that's just in accordance with the DHCD kind of regs, or is that something special to this particular project that it's 70% local? It wasn't clear to me from the previous discussions about this.
You're going to be up and down a lot this evening. I apologize. When you step in, let's step in the rail. You can step in. Yeah, if you want to sit up with... Maybe you'd rather sit in the audience. Hold on. Yes, go ahead again.
70% is the maximum local preference that is allowable by DHCD through the Local Action Unit Program, which is the program that these units would be applied to. So it's the mechanism through DHCD to have these non-comp permit units, so they're units created through the inclusionary zoning ordinance included on subsidized housing inventory. So in local preference are people that currently live in Newton, people that work in Newton, and then households that have children enrolled in the Newton Public Schools.
Can I just follow up?
Please.
I maybe this is a discussion for another time, but is there a difference of opinion, or is there a range of opinions on whether that's appropriate, given the need in the general area?
Yeah, so the city will actually have to submit a demonstration of need to DHCD to approve the 70% local preference. So the DHCD is actually typically their stance on local preference is that they generally do not like it because they feel that it sort of perpetuates housing discrimination.
I would imagine.
If we put that in here,
we're saying we're going to apply for it, but we may not get it.
Right. Based upon the data that we submit to the city, to the HCD, to make the case for local preference, they could say, you know, we're only going to give you 50% of the units because you haven't supported that you have the local need.
So we'll attempt to set aside, or
I think we have to wordsmith it a little. We may not get the 70%, so I think we need to wordsmith it a little bit here. Great point. Thank you. Okay. All set, Councilor Schwartz?
One other question. Do we have any comparable projects to tell us what the percentage of local preferences in Newton, or do we not have anything like this? Barney?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
We're
asking DHCD to have the maximum amount.
Sure.
Okay, set aside our local preference. We can easily make that case based upon our housing statistics in terms of the number of households that would qualify.
Do we have any current projects that have a 70% preference, which is the max, or do we currently have like 50% in some of the situations, or do we not have any projects that have a
40%? Alexander's whispering in my ear, and I see Nate is raising his hand, so.
Yeah.
Hey, why don't you go first, and then I'll...
The Court Street project, which is a homeownership project where there's 9 affordable units and a total of 36 units. This is our most recent comp, and we can double-check tomorrow. I'm quite certain that the city was approved the 70% local park.
Thank you so much.
I think Curve Street also used the maximum.
Okay. All right. Are we set on 4 then? Let's move on to 5. Yes, Councillor Auchincloss.
One of the chief points of the project was that Newtonville was very underserved for retail. So if you were going to vote for this project, I presume that would be one of the reasons you would vote for it, and that might be inserted after the diversification of commercial options in the village, maybe that Newton or Newtonville is underserved for retail.
I guess I have a big problem with that, because we're going from 60,000 square feet of commercial space to 40,000 square feet of commercial space.
I have retail options, though.
I don't know what our current retail is versus what we're getting here. I don't think we're having a significant change at all.
The total commercial square footage isn't increasing significantly, but I don't remember the breakdown of retail. I don't believe that the retail is that high on that site. So it could be appropriate to add that.
I mean, we can discuss it, but I don't think we're dramatically increasing retail here. Go ahead, Councilor Albright.
My point wasn't on that, but I do think we're moving from a place where there's Boston Ballet and a gas station. So in terms of the retail options, I do think we are increasing it.
We have no idea what's going to be in there.
Maybe the planning department could. Well, we do know it's retail space. It's not for the Boston Ballet, and it's not a gas station.
We don't know what they're putting in there, except that they've represented that the barn is coming in as a potential tenant.
True. I
think we need to be fair here. They could put, except for the uses are prohibited, they could put anybody they want here. They could have Boston Ballet, the Boston Ballet too could come in here theoretically.
Yeah.
Am I right?
I don't know if a school could come in there. But could I raise another issue?
Yes, please.
So the MU4 talks about a commercial village center. So I think we should use that term on number five. It's not just a village, it's the commercial village center. And we should be referring to it.
Where would you want to put that, Councilor Albright?
Pardon?
Where would you want to put that?
Well, it says the Newtonville village location. It's about the commercial village.
So that's where you want to insert the different language for MU4? I just want to understand so they can draft it.
I think you could put it right there in the second line.
Does that work for folks? Okay. What about the statement regarding parking? Are you all comfortable with that? I'm not sure I am, frankly, but again, I want to go defer to the will of the committee.
Folks, I'm not seeing any objections, so why don't we leave it as is with the wordsmithing that was suggested, is it not? Okay. Number six.
Rather than will not adversely affect, can you say will positively affect?
Well, I think the adversely affect is special permit language now, as opposed to zone change language, right? Am I correct? And our standard for special permit is not adversely affect. It's a negative.
Yep.
Okay. Anything on six, Councilor Albright?
So does the ordinance say will not adversely affect the neighborhood? Is that the language?
That is the language.
Okay.
Going on to seven, please.
It sounds sick. Attractive is one of those value words. I don't know.
Let's go there.
Attractive public gathering space. I mean.
I think that attractive. I would agree with you. I mean, if you want to put an accessible public gathering space or a public gathering space, but attractive is a descriptive. Or a public gathering space of a certain number of square feet.
Yeah, a large. Yeah, I mean, a certain square feet. Yeah.
Councilor Auchincloss?
Can we replace the word vitality with walkability?
I would suggest adding the word walkability rather than replacing it because they're different concepts. Does that work for you?
Yes.
Okay. No, we just drive through West Newton now. We don't drive through Newtonville. All right. Okay, let's move on. Are we good with seven, folks? That's one of our standard findings in terms of no nuisance or serious hazard. Going on to eight, just move it up on the screen a little bit. Stop, thank you. I'm having some discomfort with the way we're talking about the petitioner's traffic studies, and then we hired someone who basically agreed with them. I just think we need to make some findings here. I don't think we need to reference the studies they did and we did.
Okay, I thought it would be helpful to reference that we did our own, but we don't need to.
Well, I mean. I think if you want to, I would suggest we make an affirmative finding as a statement, and if we want to reference it, there were studies by the petitioner and a peer review analysis. So that you're not just creating it out of thin air. I think that's what you're getting at. Mm-hmm. I think we can condense it a lot.
Yep.
Okay, does that work for folks? Councilor Cody, you're looking puzzled. And I'm not suggesting you ordinarily look puzzled, just in this instance.
I'm just normally puzzled, but I'm just, it's just what it says in general, agrees with the analysis performed by the petitioner. So that's kind of, in general, what in general did they not agree with? You know?
Yeah, well, that's why I suggested we take that out. I don't think that works.
Frankly.
Okay, are we good with eight otherwise? Can we move on to nine, please? I'm not comfortable referencing memoranda from the petitioner in our findings at all.
Okay.
Nor do I think things like careful attention and table design, anybody can say that. It's not a negative on the good work I'm sure they're going to do, but I think we ought to be factual. Yes, Councilor Schwartz?
Is there a requirement? I think there is, right, for the MU4 that it contributes to the efficient use and conservation. Does it have to be significantly contribute?
The word significant is in the
criteria. And is that just a judgment of the council, or is there some kind of metric for that? Or is just
no metrics.
Okay.
So I think it's a judgment of the council.
So I can understand then that there might be some need to reference like the LEED gold and stuff like that, because
that's the middle sentence and repeat the and beginning and the end.
Okay.
I think that the last sentence
is worth keeping in my mind.
The first part of the last sentence is a factual statement. The second part of having a real hard time with it, again, I don't know where that comes from.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah?
I don't really want to do this right now, but I'll help work on the language. I think we have to be more specific than talk about LEED gold certifications. We expect they're going to do that. They're committing to doing that. That's great. But I think we've been struggling for a long time with how to substantiate the criterion as it's stated. But I do think we need to have some specific measures in here. Not qualify them, but just have it.
I'm fine with that. I'm just not comfortable with things like, and again, no fault, but you know, mechanical and engineering plumbing system is chosen in size to meet minimal heating and cooling loads and ensure occupant comfort. I mean, that doesn't mean anything to me. I mean, I would expect that in any building I ever occupied as a tenant, that they'd work to ensure that my comfort was sufficient, or I'm not going to rent from them.
Depends on what your rent was.
Right? I have a high comfort. Well, actually, I don't have a high comfort level. Obviously. Oh, thank you, Councilor. I'm not sure if that's a criticism or a compliment. My lack of patience. All right. I think Ms. Anand, you understand our concerns here. Not that we're disagreeing with the concepts, but we want to just kind of be very specific in terms of staff. Yeah. Yes, go ahead.
On the copy that I've been working from, the sentence says the building shall achieve LEED gold for neighborhood development, and that appears to be different up there.
We corrected it in this version.
This is the correct version. They've been working on this repeatedly, and I think there's some words missing.
It's a never-ending document.
So,
never done. Planning is
I'm working on the document.
What are we doing here that is mid-rise version 3 as opposed to neighborhood development?
It's a different
I'm going to suggest that this is way above my pay grade as well. That's maybe an offline conversation. Suffice to say, it does meet this standard. Is that...
It will.
Actually, just that this title of this standard sounds nicer.
I think we've got to go with what it is. Okay, can we move on to 10, folks?
Can I just make one more comment? And rather than being a broken record, could I ask Ms. Anand to go through the whole thing? Every place it says Village Center, the police say Commercial Village Center.
Sure.
I mean, this is not just a bunch of houses in a place here. This is a commercial center.
That's a very fair point. Okay, going to 10, please. Hold on. Why wouldn't any proposed development expedite the environmental cleanup?
It will. Anything would, but...
So I don't see this as something we need. Anybody wants to do this, has to clean it up.
Sure. I thought it was a finding you might want to make.
Pardon?
I don't have to keep it.
I'm sorry, Councilor Crosby. You can disagree. I'm just one voice.
I completely agree. The last time we just came up, everybody thought we had to have it because there was concern in the public. But we are required to...
We haven't dealt with this in the findings. We dealt with it in a condition. The condition we put in there that said, so there's no confusion, thou shalt clean it up. Here we're saying it is a positive attribute of the project.
But it's the same issue. I agree it should come out here. I think it should come out there because it's something that the developer simply has to do to get a permit.
But
you want to keep it in one place. Now, it doesn't do any harm, but it's
Isn't it a benefit, though? I mean, if they left the buildings as they are, I mean, we've heard a number of comments from one particular speaker, I don't know, about four or five times now. You know, he's concerned about the pollution on the site. I know it's going to happen with whatever development, but can't we comment that it's going to happen? It's a finding. I found
one
that.
One person who, I mean, I just, it's irrelevant to what our job is.
I don't find it as a, I mean, to me, whether, this doesn't cause me to vote for or against the project at all, because it's something that has to be done.
So I agree with you, Councilor Crosley, and if we can revisit the other one on conditions when we get to it, okay? Councilor Schwartz, you disagree, because I'll put it up to like a straw vote and we'll, you know, try to...
I don't feel strongly, I just thought that... It was a benefit.
Well, why don't I just ask my colleagues, President Lennon.
Maybe not here, but I appreciate Councilor Crosley's point. We should leave it in the conditions. As Councilor Schwartz mentioned, we've had one resident testify a number of times, sent a lot of documentation about it. I would just feel better if it's in the conditions piece.
We're going to get to the conditions later. I want to decide whether we're going to keep it in the findings. So, all those in favor of keeping in the findings, just to put your hands, Councilor Schwartz, those would request that we remove it. You can vote twice, you're still losing. I think that we're going to take it out of the findings. Okay, let's go to 11, please. Is it a fair statement that all units will be handicapped accessible if needed?
Adaptable.
Okay, and that's a term of art, if I'm not mistaken.
They're not necessarily designed as accessible.
But they could be made accessible if you have someone who needs.
Adaptable.
Okay, and that's an important finding. Pardon?
So a certain number are required to be designed as accessible. All units are adaptable.
Okay, so you get a tenant in somewhere, they have, something happens to them while they're occupying it, we have the ability to make it adapted to their needs. That's the idea?
Yep.
Okay. Councilor Schwartz?
Hi, go ahead.
Want to add something?
I'd like to speak. Steve Allen, principal at Prowitz Chomsky Associates. Alexander, I beg to differ with what you're saying there. What the Mass Architectural Access Board regulations requires is that all units, 160 units, are what they call Group 1 units.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is that somebody in a wheelchair can go from the front entrance up to a person's apartment and enter into that space. So all units have to be Group 1 units. 5% has to be what's called Group 2A units, so in this case 5% means that those units have to be a place that a person in a wheelchair could live. The characteristics of that would be that you have the spatial characteristics that allow for a person to move around in a wheelchair, and it means that things like bathroom cabinets can come out, kitchen cabinets can come out, that allow a person in a wheelchair to use it. So in that sense, since there's adaptability, but that happens on 5% of the units, designated as Group 2A units.
Right, so I take it we need some clarification.
I can be more specific in the language.
Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful. We want to make sure we get it right. Councilor Schwartz?
I need eight Group 2A units dispersed among the different sizes.
Yes.
So it's an equal amount of... Of two bedrooms, one bedroom, studio.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We good? So let's move on. So this is part of the special permit, and we're separating that out because it's a lot. It's dealing with retail sales.
Right. So this is for a specific use. The retail sales over 5,000 square feet. Restaurants with more than 50 seats. Personal service over 5,000 square feet.
Can you remind us what personal service is again?
Hairdresser, barber, cobbler.
Okay, just. Nail salons, is that included?
Please. Bar classes.
Pardon?
Bar classes.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, is there somewhere where the fact that you can have these uses of under 5,000 square feet or under 50 seats, or is that just
those are allowed by right.
You don't have to come. If you want to put a 4,000 square foot restaurant, you don't have to come to us for a permit.
If you have less than 50 seats, it's allowed.
Okay. Could I also ask, it refers in the actual findings to the demonstrated need for these uses. How has that need been demonstrated?
I have to think about how to describe that. I mean, we did have a retail market analysis that was submitted as part of Austin Street that did mention that Newtonville and Newton in general is underserved by retail.
The only thing that study said, we could put a lot more commercial, including retail space.
Mm-hmm.
It did not say we needed more nail salons or.
It wasn't specific to particular uses or personal services.
Well, I guess the question for us colleagues, and this is an important one, are we going to find and then allow an array of different uses here without coming back to us for any kind of special permit? And there's certainly good arguments for doing that. We don't want developers to have to come in all the time. But are we going to get what we're looking for in terms of the right mix of businesses that the public seems to think we're going to get here? I'm putting that out there as a question. Colleagues, any thoughts, concerns? Councilor Schwartz?
I'll bite. Is this an exhaustive list?
This is the list regarding what the petitioner is requesting, the uses the petitioner is requesting.
We haven't vetted this, so have we?
So what's not on this list? Like what uses? I guess, are we excluding certain things by specifying these particular ones? Like banks or something? I guess standalone ATMs implies no banks, it's just ATMs? Or?
What would an animal service, I mean, is that you know, a Petco or something?
So,
Debbie Petland, I've been there for 50 years.
So I think we really need to go to.
I don't have a problem necessarily with this list. I just wanted to clarify whether it was like exclusive or.
I
have a question about this list, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Ground level office sounds to me like the absolute antithesis of what we're looking for. That such offices are generally in the planning documents I've seen. Referred to as like the antithesis of a lively street.
You know, can I make a suggestion on this one? This seems to have come from the petitioner's wish list. We've had zero discussions, as I recall, about this. And what I suggest, Ms. Anand, is maybe you can consult with your colleagues and come back with a more refined recommendation as to what you think is appropriate here. I mean, I share the concern about saying, sure, you could turn all this over to street-level office use.
Yeah.
I mean, that's clearly not what we intend.
That'd be a dead street for sure.
Well, I don't think we intend to have other bank facilities in there.
Right, and I don't think the petitioner, you know, intends to do that. I think they're looking for maximum flexibility when they're leasing. You know,
the problem with that is that we don't know. We're crafting a board order for 50 years. What they may put in there now is not what they're going to put in there in 2 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this petitioner, despite his goodwill, may not own the property then. And the petition goes with the land. So, Councilor Lipoff and then Schwartz.
Well, I think it should be as general as possible. I mean, just retail. I mean, I don't think it's up to us to say, you know, what they rent for, and it will change over time. So I think this is too narrow, and I think we should be less specific.
So you're comfortable with them putting whatever they want there? How do we enlarge? I mean, how do we? I'm asking the question. If that's what you want.
Well, you know, I think there was some talk about banks or things more specific, but you know, this is a, you know, I don't think we can tell them exactly
what's afoot here. There's many different kinds of businesses. We can't
take. They could always come. We're not telling them they can't put something. We're telling them they can't put something without coming back for a special permit. There's a difference.
So basically, they took some. Right, that's in the condition and later on. Basically, what they did is go through the list of uses that require a special permit in this zone and are requesting a special permit for flexibility.
Well, they're asking for a special permit now so they don't have to come back with any specificity at all.
But they're asking for, these are all the uses that require special permits in the MU4.
So let me get this straight. In the MU4 zone, if you want to build these types of uses, you have to get a special permit.
Correct.
What they're saying is give us a special permit now. We're not telling you what we're putting in here, but give us a special permit to do it. Seems to me that's completely contradictory to what we're trying to do with the MU4 zone.
That's what we do in all of our commercial zones. That's what we're doing on Needham Street. That's what we do at the street. That's what we did with the square.
Yeah, but we're creating a special zone here. I mean, in those are business zones, and they can do most things by right. Am I missing something?
Some are by right, some are not.
Yeah. I'm sorry, President Lennon? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I'm sorry, President.
To your point, I'm sorry. The last sentence, aren't we kind of addressing that with the last sentence? Are you concerned? We're saying that these are consistent with the purposes of the MU4
district. I'm not, and my point is we've had zero vetting of it, and I'm not sure that giving them a broad-based special permit to put in whatever they want here is at all consistent with the comprehensive.
And I'm not saying that's right either, but I see there needs to be some balance between what you're saying and what Councilor Lipoff is saying, too.
I'm not looking to over-regulate them. Don't get me wrong. I do not want this petitioner coming back here for every 5,000-square-foot restaurant.
Yes.
But so, I do think we need to have some much clearer guidelines if we're going to give them a special permit and say, go do what you want. I think we have to have some much greater parameters than that. Councilor Schwartz?
And then to that point, though, to what Alexander was saying, I recall these discussions and other permits that we've had, so there has to be some consistent language that we've used. Is this it?
No.
Pretty consistent. What we could do is take out we could consider taking out office use, because that may not be the type of
We've definitely had this conversation before on other permits.
So can you tell us which projects we put that language in where we said you basically can do what you want?
The street, the square, even Austin Street.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The ordinance specifically calls out office space as something that we don't want to have except by special permit. So I'm very uncomfortable with giving a blanket permit for office space.
So I just hear some Councilor Schwartz, but we'll get, hold on your thought there, and then Cosby.
Councilor Albright has hit on exactly one of the points that I wanted to make. I was struck by this office, street level office use, because I distinctly remembered in the planning board memo, one of the benefits they claimed the MU4 zone provided was it does not allow for less active uses such as office on the ground floor. So I don't know if it allows it with a special permit or not. If this would imply it actually does not allow it at all, because it says that there are other things that are allowed with special permits. So that particular one, I would, either the planning development board was wrong in promoting that as one of the benefits of changing the zone, or it's by special
on
permit.
Memo, I noted the memo that came from the planning department last Friday, I noted that these are the uses they are seeking. This is what's allowed in the MU4, and this is what they are seeking relief for. I was very clear.
They're allowed to put an
office about the memo.
Seek relief for it by special permit, and they are.
Scott Wolf's memo of January 25th is inaccurate on page 2 at the top.
That possibly is, but there was a planning department memo as well.
So they are allowed under MU4 to have office use, but only
by special permit.
Well, I share the concern of Councilor Schwartz and Albright. That's entirely inconsistent with what we're trying to do here.
It may or may not be, but I guess the other concern I have is, you know, we've heard from some of the Newtonville businesses that they're concerned about competition or dilution of their market
So is this going to give more flexibility to these particular landlords than the current landlords have on Walnut Street and in the other part of the Newtonville commercial center?
My guess is the flexibility what you put in there is the subject of what you put in your commercial lease. If you're a tenant, you're having coming in with a certain type of, you have a hair salon, you're going to go to your landlord and say, don't put another hair salon in your building.
But currently by rights, are the current buildings in the zone that is across the highway, is it as expansive as what we are providing here, or would they have to come in for special permits for these same uses?
I think they have to come in for special permits for all these uses.
That's a question for the planning.
Oh, I'm sorry. But I'm just trying to answer it ahead of them, that's all. Maybe I'll get it wrong.
Alexander is chomping a bit there.
I'm not sure there's a chomping going on. I think there's a consultation.
I believe they're required to come in for special permits for all these uses.
You know what you're asking?
Are they? Yeah.
This is
so it might be a little bit preferential treatment.
This is a complicated issue. It's actually pretty important. There's very fair philosophical differences about how much you limit or don't limit. But Ms. Anand, for next time, I think we really need to hear, while I appreciate what the petitioner may want, that's not our job, is to just say what petitioners want. Our job is to think about what's in the best interest of the city. So why don't we think about what's in the best interest of the city here? Councillor Crosley?
Well, in the same vein, I also have a little, the only thing I have a little trouble with is the office space on the first floor, but partly I have trouble with that because we're waiving the entrance every 50 feet, although I want to note at the same time that I believe I read in this week's materials that the petitioner has given up requesting the waiver pertaining to transparency of the street level facility so that there'll be a lot of glass and so forth. So what I'm going to ask is for our next conversation, because it's getting rather late, to think of those several things in concert in terms of, because it may impact what use, if any uses we want to restrict at the first floor level. Because I think the interplay between transparency, literally visual, glass versus entrances and activity and the uses all interplay. And I don't want to be too restrictive either. I can imagine some kind of an office space which, generates a fair amount of activity and it's all glass and so forth. It may work.
I guess the point there is they could always come in for a request for a special permit for that as opposed to granting it by right.
I understand, but if there's something small, I just would like if the planning department could think about those three things and what the interplay is and if there's a way we can clarify that here, I'd rather do it here than imagine.
I think that's fine.
Yes. Okay.
All right. So, yes, Councilor Yates.
A couple of things, looking at the memo, first of all, where you say BU zone, what does that mean?
Business 1 and 2.
So it's both.
Business, yep.
They're identical?
Not always.
They're not Councilor Yates, and part of this parcel is B1 and part of this parcel is B2.
Well, it would be useful if you say B1 when you mean or the other. I do note, as you said, that the MU4 zone does not allow for less active uses, such as office on the first floor, without the benefit of a special permit. And then for tenant leasing flexibility, the petitioner is seeking special permits for health club establishments at or above ground floor. I didn't see at ground floor in the list. Was that just inadvertent, or is there something I'm not grasping?
I'll have to check. I don't know off the top of my head.
Fair point, Councilor Yates. Let's let the planning department do some work here. All right, we're not going to, folks, it's getting close to 10, and I do want to wrap up this evening. Let's try to go at least for a couple more findings. Could you just scroll down a little bit, please? Well, slow down.
I'm a little uncomfortable with all this reference to the comprehensive plan. I must say I feel like we're cherry picking it. I could find things in the comprehensive plan that would be completely contrary to this order. But colleagues, I mean, I have no problem with saying consistent with the comprehensive plan if that's the finding we want to make. But I'm uncomfortable with kind of.
Well, I'm getting tired, frankly, but I think the comprehensive plan is what's supposed to be guiding our decision making. So,
I don't disagree with
you. Written better, I don't know, but I don't think that we're cherry picking the comprehensive plan. I think there are sections of the comprehensive plan that are meant to be read in concert, and this particular element was voted, I think, in November of 2011. Specifically because this council, less maybe three members, decided that it was important to have a new district. So I think there should be a reference to that fact, because what in fact we're asking for is to use this district.
Councilor Schwartz?
So I think that makes sense to me if that was the part of the comprehensive plan was actually pass in concert with, or as, almost as the reasoning for the MU4. I was not on the council at the time, so if that's the case, then November 11 is just before the era of.
I think that there's only three of the committee members who were actually on the council at the time that was voted in.
But it sounds like if it's historically, you know, linked to the passage of the zone, then I think that makes sense.
They know that.
We're all doing the math to see how long we've served. Some of us, you know. Look, I don't want to, let's not belabor it right now. I think we ought to see, maybe Ms. Anand, if you can kind of tighten it up a little bit, that might be helpful. You're fine. Okay. You'd leave it. You're comfortable with it. I'm getting outvoted a whole bunch here. That's fine. Well,
I'm not going to go back there,
Councilor Cody, but... All right. But, can I say
one comment?
Yes, you may.
So I think it's important to note that the wards affected by the comprehensive plan, increased housing, things like Crescent Street, Austin Street, Court Street, this project here. So Ward 1, we have a new city council since the comprehensive plan was in. Ward 2, we have two new city councilors. Ward 3, we have two new city councilors. So... of the three wards that are most impacted by North of the Pike type activities, there's been a big turnover. I don't know if the comprehensive plan would have been embraced by all of them. That's why I wouldn't count that in. You know?
If a new body doesn't like it, they can vote to change it. But there's a document that our predecessors voted. I think until we change it, we're bound by it. Boy, I didn't realize there's such a great turnover on this council. I've heard for a long time we have no turnover. So. Glad to remind us that not all of us have been here a long time. All right. It's 10 o'clock, folks. We have a lot more to go on the findings. I'm going to suggest this. I'm going to suggest we adjourn, because I think we're rapidly losing our ability to be good at this. Have folks had an opportunity to send wordsmithing things to Ms. Anand? Did anybody write to you? Okay.
Councilor,
I'm not going to identify all the people who are good about this, but
Councilor Crosley was also very helpful.
I'm sorry, what?
Councilor Crosley and you were very helpful as well. So
I'll take the kudos. Look, folks, if you have additional comments, please get them to Ms. Anand. We're taking this up next week. We're going to take up where we left off in the findings. We're going to try to get through all of them. So we're going to adjourn. Thank you very much.
You don't